We're going to be starting out with... Hey, members, on the agenda, we're going to be moving up from the last person, last Senate file 1860, Peterson, will be the second bill today. So today, right now, we're going to start off with Senate file 2144, Senator DeCryf. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Senate file 2144 is a bill that would basically allow the cutting of dead or down trees in rivers and streams, essentially in the state of Minnesota. We had a problem down in our area. I live in Le Sueur County. And the river that runs from Mankato up toward the Twin Cities, we have, the cities of St. Peter that are affected, Henderson, Le Sueur, Belle Plaine. And a few years ago, we had a tornado go through the city of St. Peter. And what essentially happened is we had an awful lot of trees that blew down. And some folks wanted to go in and just cut those trees up. Just folks wanted to cut them up for firewood, and they were told they weren't allowed to by the DNR. And for years now, we've been fighting those trees as they float up the river, and especially in the spring of the year during flooding, these trees cause log jams, and that's been a real problem for us with the flooding in that area. There's been another somewhat of a consequence from this too. And last spring, we suffered the loss of a MnDOT worker, Michael Struck, who's out of the Mankato DOT office, when he was trying to clear some of this debris away from the away from a culvert to try and prevent some flooding. So what we want to do essentially with this bill is just allow folks to go in without a permit, on state land without permission. On private land, they would obviously, we're not trying to change any laws there. Private land, they would have to get permission from the landowner. But without permission from the DNR, just go in and cut either dead or down trees or clean debris just for their own use or whatever. But there shouldn't be any fiscal note on this. We're not trying to ask for any money. We're just asking people that people be allowed to go cut up these dead or down trees.
Hey, members, Senator, you have somebody with you, Ann Traxler from Le Sueur County Emergency Management.
Yes, Mr.
Welcome.
Chair, I do.
Welcome. Would you like to add some testimony?
Yes, I'm Ann Traxler. Mr. Chair, I'm Ann Traxler from Le Sueur County Emergency Management. I'm the director. And I'm here because I have dealt with tornadoes. Floods, we've been declared twice in the last year for flooding. And talking about this debris that's out there, laying there, and that you just watch it go down. We had the last tornado that we had that was significant. We had a small one last year, but it was EF0. The last one that was significant was in 2006, and that debris is still sitting just out of St. Peter. And especially this year when we had the significant flooding, a lot of it came down through Le Sueur County, Nicollet County, Sibley County, and especially when you got down by Henderson, it caused huge, along with the ice jams that we had, it was a major mess. And that's where you see in some of the pictures what ends up laying there. And they do like to just get stuck under those bridges and cause a lot of problems, and then the water rises because they're damming it up, kind of like a beaver dam, and we have to go in there and either move the debris or the roads will flood and the bridge might go out. So I'm just here to let you know what we've been dealing with. And
So Ms. Traxler, the removal on state properties, you're thinking that's certainly going to at least attempt to eliminate some of these issues when it comes to flood.
Indeed.
Flood mitigation, if you will.
Indeed. Indeed. Okay. And at minimal cost to the state. In fact, no cost is what they're offering to have them come in, especially like this winter when we had such low water levels on the river. It would have been very easy. They could get in there with the lack of snow. It could have been taken care of. But now, and it just seems to just keep moving down, and now it's heading, you know, once it goes from Henderson, it's going to end up going to Shakopee. It just goes down the Minnesota River, kind of, if you watch, like a canoe that would go down. Yes. I hope, Mr. Chair, that answered your question.
Yes, yes. You certainly wouldn't try and convince us that all of this would stop, would you?
No. Indeed, okay. I'm sure that you were dealing with it in many other areas.
Yeah. Okay, any questions, members? Senator Kielash.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, is there someone from the DNR that can
comment on this? Yeah, I'm going to ask for testimony. Is there anybody from the DNR that would like to speak to this issue? All right. Please come forward. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is David Luthi. I'm the Deputy Director for the Ecological and Water Resources Division of the Department of Natural Resources. I met with Senator DeKreif before. You got that right? So, and we talked about this, and largely there is existing land use controls under local units of government for shoreland, floodplain, and wild and scenic river management that allows the removal of dead and down trees already under local authority. Concerned, at least on part of this, is that would remove some of the authority of local units of government in managing their land use districts if the law is changed under 103F. As far as the source of the problem is that, particularly like on the Minnesota River, with the a lot of hydrology, the water comes off the landscape faster. It does cause the banks to erode and trees to fall in, and it's going to be a continuing problem probably for years to come. But we run into problems, you know, on private lands with doing this. We talked about that as well. On public lands, it is possible, but we don't probably have the ability to go in and remove all the trees that are down and going by. And so I guess that it starts to potentially interfere with how are people going to access it, how will they remove it, will it cause other damage, and when you're going to go on to state lands to start to do removal with equipment and things like that we would have some concerns about.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, why would the DNR stop this from happening if there's an issue? And I guess one of my questions is do we really need legislation to get this kind of stuff taken care of? Can't we do it with rulemaking through the DNR or through, you know, cooperation with the local units of government, whatever?
Mr. Luthi.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, our permitting rules for work in public waters allows for removal of dead and down and diseased trees, as do all the land use programs under local units of government. So it's already authorized without needing additional laws or rules. It's just a question of when and where and how somebody might do that that's not the landowner.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Excuse me for interrupting. Mr. Chair, during the tornado and when we've had a blowdown in Le Sueur area, we tried to clean up the debris. The county had people in there doing it, and we were told to stop because it was on the right-of-way, the public right-of-way in along the river. It was off the county land, and we were told to stop. And I know in 2006, I talked with my county administrator, Darrell Pettis, this morning, and he reminded me that in 2006, MnDOT was trying to clean up an area, and DNR also told them to stop cleaning it, that okay. It had to stay where it was, and
sure,
because it was
sure.
There.
Mr. Luthi, could you explain why that would be at all for the committee, or can you give us an idea where? Are you talking liabilities here, or what am I hearing?
I was in the area and working southwest Minnesota at the time, and I am familiar with the storm, and I I don't know exactly the details of where the county was working on each individual parcel, but and I'm not sure who told you no and what the reasons behind that were, but, you know, I guess that's I'm not aware of what the barrier was and why we were saying no, so I would need to have more information to be able to respond to that. So normally we would cooperate in this type of thing, and it's not our desire to. I mean, it's already allowed to do this type of work under existing laws and rules to remove this type of stuff, but it may be a question of when you're working on somebody else's property whether you'd done advanced coordination and they were comfortable with what was being done. So,
well, no, Senator Kielash, I'll get a hold of you or address your questions in a second, but now maybe I'm not following you. So you're saying now that this can actually be done without this legislation? Mr. Luthy?
Mr. Chairman, yes. The rules allow for removal of dead and down trees. I guess that the question at hand is that do you need to have the landowner's permission to remove it off of their property without them? And so I think that there's nothing that stops anybody from being able to remove dead and down trees. If it's on state land, I expect that we would want the landowner to at least be aware of the process and approve that and the methods if there's something to be done. But that's entirely possible under the existing rules, and you wouldn't need to actually amend the laws to do this. So,
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman Salothi, one of the things that this does not specifically deal with the Minnesota River Valley, it's kind of statewide. Is this going to create unforeseen consequences in, for example, northern Minnesota or trout streams or any other kind of place that that this may be more damaging than helpful?
Mr. Luthy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it's hard to project exactly how it would be used, but right now is that if you work with the landowner and you work with the local unit of government, mm-hmm. and it could be possible to do this anywhere without changes, and I guess that by doing it this way, it does remove the local units of government from the ability to have some control over that and to decide. They have floodplain and shoreline ordinances that they're supposed to administer for management of these areas as well that the landowners are also subject to, but the removal of trees should be possible.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Luthy, so when it's private land along the shoreline, it's not a problem. They notify the landowner and work it out. But from what I gathered, the testimony, the problem is when the state owns the land. So how does the DNR deal with that if somebody wants to come in and clean up the dead trees along the creek on state DNR lands?
Mr. Luthy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, we would work with the people who are requesting that and the parcel manager, be it wildlife or whatever, and work out if there was a desire to do it on the state land.
Senator James.
Mr. Luthy, one of the concerns I have is that in southern Minnesota we get a lot of flash flooding, and those floods come up rather fast. We get a heavy rain. And so as we were talking about earlier, coordinating it with the DNR in order to do this, well, if we have one of these floods that come up, and they come up rather rapidly, and if these folks can go out and get the stuff out of the river and eliminate some of the damage to the flooding, wouldn't that be the process we'd want to use? Wouldn't we want to have the ability to do that?
Mr.
In other words, can you react in a timely fashion quick enough if we have this flood comes up, we get a 6-inch rain Friday night, how can they react with you so they can get out there Saturday morning and start removing some of this stuff?
Mr. Luthy, maybe we should have you go through just real quickly here, and then we're going to move on. But real quickly, how the process would work if I were to come and ask you that I want to go on your or on the state land and remove trees, how long of a process is that going to be?
Mr. Chairman, I guess that's I don't know the answer to that. I guess that's, I mean, if there were particular habitats, I mean, if it's for fisheries management or stuff like that, I mean, we clearly don't want to see all the debris and woody material removed from a floodplain or a channel. But stuff that is at risk for debris that would cause blockage of bridges or something like that, if there was a way to access that, I think that we would work expeditiously with people who wanted to request that. It would be best if we did this in advance. The trees don't die overnight. It's not. We don't want to do this right in front of a flood. There certainly would be time to work out if there's a desire to do this type of removal. There used to be a program funded by the legislature where county engineers worked on this type of debris removal, and so there is a process that has been done in the past that does this type of thing, and with some early coordination and places where we see it starting to build up and we want to address the problem, I think that we could work with whoever is proposing to do that.
Mr. Lathy, if you look on the back page of the bill, line 2.2, does that not address your issues here? It does not alter the original alignment, slope, or cross-section of the waters? They would have to be cognizant of that. Does that give you a little better feeling as to, the shoreline not washing down?
Mr. Chairman, that language, I believe, is already in our existing rules that says this very thing. So, okay.
Senator DeCrive.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I've actually met with the manager of MnDOT from the Mankato District Office. And he had his crews trying to remove some debris, actually, and some trees from the from their right-of-way, which happened to be along a stream as well. And he received a phone call from the DNR actually threatening to send him to jail for authorizing this without the DNR working together with them. I know when we met earlier with the DNR, he did explain that that this was in current statute, but I believe it certainly has to be made clear, and because I don't think it's very clear, because there's certainly a lot of either misinformation or wrong information or mixed information amongst the DNR as to what you can do and can't do. So what I'm attempting to do here is clear this up so that without programs having to go in place, we can actually allow citizens to be helpful. And I think citizens would be helpful in this case. I don't think we have to have extra money at this point. We're not asking for extra money. We're just asking for citizens to be allowed to help. And I think that should be allowed, and I think that should be cleared up in statute so that people know that they can help.
And, Senator, they'd also benefit, obviously, from the Deadwood situation, or they wouldn't be cutting it, too, as well. So any further discussion or questions? Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, from that last exchange, it sounds like maybe what ought to happen is DNR needs to send out information to the other agencies about what can be done and what can't be done. If it's MnDOT and DNR who have issues, maybe MnDOT and DNR need to talk about it rather than put something in this statute book.
Well, I would have to say, Senator DeCrive, you've had this bill drawn up for some time, have you not, or how long ago since this was actually dropped in?
Well, we've talked about this, Mr. Chair, for some time. I guess one other point that I wanted to point out is there's a picture in your packets, and one of the things that maybe I should let Ann Traxler talk about, but when they try clearing this debris, they're not even allowed to take this debris out of the river. They're supposed to take it out of one side, go over and dump it back in the river on the other side. And that's how bizarre this is to me. I'm just a common sense guy, but that just doesn't make sense to me, Mr. Chair. And I think we just need to be able to allow people to take this trash out of there.
Ms. Traxler, real quickly.
And that's exactly the case, as he said. And also, just to give you an idea of the scope, we had the tornado was in 2006, and that wood debris is still sitting. If you go south out of St. Peter and go towards Mankato and look to your left, you will still see a quagmire of wood that's been sitting there now since 2006, August of 2006. We have tried, that is not my area, but we have a Kasota area, and we just had to leave it. And Mr. Pettis, who is our administrator, is also our engineer. So he is the one who dealt with DNR trying to clean this up, and we had many volunteers.
Thank you.
At that time.
Senator Kelech.
This is, just to be clear, this is not in the national Minnesota River Wildlife Refuge area where that kind of no cleanup would be.
It's just along that. Thanks.
Any further questions, members? Senator Dames, would you move the bill, please?
So move.
Senate file 2144 by Senator Dames for passage to the floor. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
It's always good to say
we all have Senate file 1860, Senator Peterson. Concrete Diamond Grinding and Saw Slurry Disposal Division.
Thank you, Chair and members. I think this might be the last time, well, maybe not the last time, but we have some agreement relating to the slurry that's collected in our road maintenance process. We have before you, I need to present the A3 amendment, Senate File 1860.
Thank you. I'm passing out that amendment right now. Senator Peterson, to the A3 amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, you'll see in this amendment the language that's being added. It's essentially taking this material, this saw slurry, that's a byproduct of the diamond grinding process, and removing it from a list that has really caused this problem. You'll see the language that's being added is concrete diamond grinding and saw slurry associated with the construction, improvement, or repair of a road when deposited on the road project site is in a manner that is in compliance, and I'll have an oral amendment here as well, in general standards for water of the state under rules of the agency. That's what's being added, and then we had one more change, so I need to offer an oral amendment.
Senator, you can incorporate it in your amendment.
Yep. On line 1.12, I need to strike general standards for waters of the state under, and then add best management practices and.
Senator, that would be after the with?
Yes, Mr. Chair, after the word with.
And those words were what?
Best management practices and. So line 1.112 will read, manner that is in compliance with best management practices and rules of the agency.
Members, any questions about the oral amendment to the amendment? I guess we don't have to move that. Any questions to the amendment, members? Hearing none, the A3 amendment, as amended. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
As modified,
I'm sorry. Any further discussion on the A3 amendment as modified? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Senator Peterson, you have a witness with you.
Mr. Chair, my name is Matt Zeller with the Concrete Paving Association of Minnesota, and I just wanted to say that we've been working with MPCA and MnDOT, and I think we're all in agreement with this language, and I don't think that anybody has problems with the way things are.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just checked with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency representative, and they do not have an interest in commenting on this.
Members, any further questions on House File 1860? Senator Higginson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, so what's the practical effect of what we've just done?
This material is
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, this material is no longer classified as a solid waste.
Yes, I get that. What does that really mean in the big world?
It means that the contractor can deposit this material along the roadside.
Senator Higgins, we had a fairly lengthy discussion, if I recall, too. Was there any further questions at all, Senator Higgins? Yeah, right on the shoulder. Is MPCA here would like to testify, or did you say you had worked this out with?
Mr. Chair, I just got another thumbs up. So.
Okay, thumbs up from Mr. Kudelka in the far corner. Okay. Any further questions?
It's a good sign.
Members, hearing none, Senator Peterson renews his motion to pass Senate File 1860 as amended to the floor. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Members, before us now, Senate File 1889, Senator Cruz. Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee change into the Legislative Commission, Citizen Permanent School Trust Commission. Senator Cruz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. I sincerely appreciate the opportunity to be before you today to talk about our permanent school trust lands. I think as legislators, throughout our career, you get occasionally those bills that kind of define who you are and you get to make a significant difference. For me, this is one of those bills. So I just want to take a couple moments and thank some folks that have done just a tremendous amount of legwork on this before it's even gotten to this point, decades of legwork. I'd like to thank Senator Wieger, who's chaired the Legislative Commission on School Trust Lands and done just a ton of work on this. I would like to thank Representative Denise Dietrich, who's been an amazing advocate for school trust lands her whole time in the House. I would like to thank my co-authors, Senator Bach, Senator Bonhoff, Senator Ingebrigtsen, and Senator Olson. With that, I guess probably the best way to move forward, Mr. Chairman, it is a fairly sizable bill. So if I could just briefly walk through the bill and then move into any comments and testimony, if that would please
fine.
You.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm not going to hit every single point, but I think we should hit the high points. Senate File 1889 what essentially transfers the authority for management of the school trust lands to the newly created Director of Trust Lands and Minerals, and also creates a legislative citizen permanent school fund commission to advise the legislature and director on school trust lands management. The director will be selected for a 4-year term based on names submitted by the legislative commission. The commission consists of 16 members, including 4 members from the Senate, 4 members from the House, both 2 from minority and 2 from majority parties, so we have a good balance there. 4 public members who are appointed by the governor, 2 public members who are appointed by the Senate, and 2 public members who are appointed by the House. With that, I would like to take you to Section 3 of the bill. Essentially, what this does is this removes the school trust lands from the state forest suspense account. On Section 4, we should briefly touch on that. That actually has to do with trust lands reporting. It provides for the new director of trust lands and mineral assets to report to the newly created commission. Section 5 allows for school trust land donations to the new director. Section 6 allows for trust appraisals. It transfers the authority for appraisals that are currently done of the school trust lands to the new director. Section 7 addresses school trust land exchanges. It basically allows the director to be the fiduciary person to handle that. Section 8 handles the mineral management account. Section 9 essentially talks again about exchanges and transfers some more of that authority to do the exchanges to the newly created director position. Mm-hmm. We're going to spend a little bit more time on Section 11. That's where we create the Legislative Citizens Permanent Commission. Again, you see the layout there. 2 public members appointed by the Senate, 2 by the House. 4 by the governor, and then 4 from each of the respective bodies. These public members serve 4-year staggered terms and must have practical experience or demonstrated knowledge in renewable or non-renewable resource management, development, real estate, business, finance, trust administration, asset management, or the practice of law in any of these areas of natural resources or real estate. The governor's appointments are subject to the advice and consent of the Senate. Then I'd like to move to subdivision 6 of that section. That's another very important point. That allows for the nomination of the director. This section says that it directs the new commission to nominate 3 to 5 potential candidates for the governor to review and choose from as this new director. Section 12 addresses policy and purposes. This establishes the purpose of this new law on the school trust lands administration and the director, and they are as follows. The director is to oversee the school trust lands. The state must act as a trustee in the most prudent and profitable manner. Third, the trustee must be concerned with both current beneficiaries and future beneficiaries. And when we speak of beneficiaries, we're talking about Minnesota school children. Fourth, and finally, the law must be liberally construed to fulfill the state's obligation to the trust beneficiaries. Section 13 then moves on to define commissioner and director and school trust lands for the purpose of these statutes. Section 14 speaks to governance, and it provides for the new director to do the following things: manage the school trust lands and new commission to be recommended policies on school trust lands to the director and the legislature, enter into agreements with the DNR to manage the school trust lands, contract with other entities to manage the school trust lands when the DNR is not the appropriate entity to do so, and fourth, enter into joint ventures to develop school trust lands and minerals with the approval of the governor. We'll move on to Section 15. This speaks of policies, just general management of the school trust lands. This directs the new commission to recommend policies to the director that are consistent with the Minnesota Constitution, reflects undivided loyalty to the beneficiaries, require fair market value for the school trust lands, optimize school trust lands, revenue and values, and maintain the integrity of the school trust. Subdivision 2 speaks to the duties. This provides for the new director of the commission to recommend to the governor and legislature any necessary or desirable changes in law. The commission shall recommend policies to the governor for the long-term benefit of the trust. Subdivision 3 provides for the current DNR policies to remain in place until the new commission and director chooses to change them. Section 60, and I think that piece is particularly important because I feel like that provides for some stability and transition as we move from removing these trust lands from the purview of the Department of Natural Resources into this new director and commissioner's purview. Section 16, Subdivision 1, has to do with appointments. This provides that the director is appointed by the governor from the list of candidates nominated by the commission. The commissioner of the administration shall provide space and administrative services to the director unless the director finds those services from another public or private entity. The director is subject to the advice and consent of the Senate. We spoke about that before. Subdivision 2 of that statute provides that the director shall serve a 4-year term but may be removed for cause. Then we move on to Section 17. This one's particularly important. This speaks to the responsibilities of the director. The director is to take the oath of office, adopt procedures to follow state law, which we're describing right here, faithfully manage under the established policies, submit to the commission and the governor a budget and financial plan for administration of school trust lands. And I think as you dig into some of the resources that have been presented in your packets, you'll see that that's truly the heart of what we're trying to get at here is to provide that accountability. We don't feel like that has been there up to this point. The director is also supposed to direct and control budget expenditures as authorized, establish job descriptions, and employ staff. It's important to remark here that we do not foresee this being a large staff. We see this as being a staff of 4 to 5 persons, strictly to help with contract management as the director performs their duties. 7th, maintain the appropriate records of the school trust land activities. Submit all leases and contracts to legal counsel for review, to keep the commission, beneficiaries, governor, legislature, and public informed of activities of the director by reporting to the commission on a quarterly basis, and finally to respond in writing to requests by the commission. I think very quickly, I'm going to jump us to sections 21 to 26. If you have seen a previous engrossment of this legislation, this portion was missed. It's very important. It has to do with PILT payments. Essentially, in the original draft, that was a mistake that those got written out. We put those back in to make sure that our folks in the rural areas are still receiving those PILT payments. Essentially, Section 28 is just a more broad instructions to the reviser to go through and clean up any potential statutes that have missed with that. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be more than happy to answer any brief questions, or if you would like, pull up the testifiers to testify, whatever be the pleasure of the chair.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. I've got a couple questions. With regards to your compensation here of the director established under Chapter 15, can you answer that, or Mr. Knopf, can you answer how that comes about? Is that in statute, the director's wage somehow? I'm not clear on that.
Well, Mr. Chair, are you talking about Section 1?
Mm-hmm.
This basically puts the director in the Group 2 salary limits. Which, is, if you see, it appears to be consistent with some of the others of the executive director of the Gambling Control Board. That will be set, you know, by the governor and the Department of Administration what the exact salary is. But what this does is just says that it's not to exceed 85%, and this director's salary will be established under Chapter 15.
That's not 85% of the governor's wages.
Yeah, that's a maximum.
That's right. And Senator Cruz, The committee that you're establishing here, 16 members, is that correct? Can you tell me how they're compensated, if they are? Maybe I missed that.
Mr. Chairman, they would not be compensated.
They would not receive per diem, or they would receive any expenses or mileage or anything like that, do you know? Or is that something that can be set up later? Mr. Knopf has that.
Yeah.
Actually, Mr. Chair, they, if you look on page 7, lines 7.31 to 7.33, it's a terms compensation or removal. Are the same as any other kind of commission that we have in this regard. It'd be similar to LCCMR or Lassard Sams.
Okay.
As far as the I think it's like $55 a day.
Thank you.
Oh, I apologize for that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cruz, you are to be commended. You have done yeoman's work on this, and I really appreciate what you're doing to get the most amount of money we can into the corpus for the school's children. I'd like to offer the A6 amendment, which I think would solidify in statute some of those things that would help do exactly what you're trying to do. So if we could get the A6 amendment passed out, that would we, yeah. Is this appropriate to
that
do this
certainly
now?
Certainly is fine, unless, Senator, unless you have, would you like your presenters first at all, or I guess how would you like to proceed?
Mr. Chairman, I think why don't we move any amendments first?
Sure.
Let's get the bill in the.
Okay, the A6 amendment, Senator Carlson.
Okay.
Being passed out, is that correct?
Yep.
Let's get them passed out and.
Okay, so members, while they're passing this out, what the A6 amendment would do is it really deals with a lot of substantive issues in statute. That I don't think are there, and the bill didn't put in there. The first thing we would do is eliminate charging the trust for fire suppression. And I think that's something that's been going on for a long time. That's $1.7 million a year. We would move that, and we would move that in 2013, so we get into the next biennium, and it would have to be calculated into the next biennium general fund budget, that $1.7 million, and take that out of there. So that immediately helps the trust fund by $1.7 million. currently, and really part of the logic for doing that is right now the fire protection, we don't charge parks, we don't charge WMAs, we don't charge SNAs, we don't charge counties, tribes, private landowners, or anyone else for fire suppression. So why would we charge? Why would we charge the trust funds? The A6 amendment directs that the cost
Senator,
certification.
Senator Carlson, let's move a little slower here. Does anybody have any questions about the fire suppression? Those probably remember that's part of the budget, and it's figured in through the 2000. And
right, in the next biennial budget, they would have to be.
Talking about the next biennial budget.
Yeah.
I guess $1.6 million or $1.7
million. Well, approximately $1.7 million.
What lines does that have?
It's under 1.1. Line 1.12, where it takes off after a fiscal year, the Commissioner of Management and Budget may certify the total costs under appropriations for improvement administration management. What we did is we struck protection. That's where the fire protection is.
Wow, that's obscure.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So we can immediately drop another $1.7 million into the trust fund and move it into the general fund, which really, where it's, if you think about it, that's where it belongs. Because with the fire suppression, what are we trying to do? We're trying to protect homes and people. Well, that's kind of what we're doing whenever we do fire protection. So it's kind of like, why are we charging the trust fund for that? And that's just sort of general. Okay.
Any other questions? Otherwise, Senator, move on.
Okay. The other thing that the A6 does is it directs that the cost certification be presented to the Permanent School Fund Commission, the new commission that's set up under Senator Cruz's bill, so that it provides additional transparency and sunshine to the certification. The cost certification would be required to contain an analysis comparing the costs with other similar public and private lands. So this, you would always be able to see on a regular basis exactly how are we managing this compared to how anyone else would manage their lands, either another state or privately. The A6 resolves the conflict in statute that exists right now between the long-term economic return and other natural resource conservation principles by stating that if there is a conflict, the long-term economic return shall be given precedence. This language is nearly verbatim out of the DNR, the new DNR commissioner's operational order on school trust funds lands. So this would put that in statute. It directs that the lands that are in management designations that prevent long-term economic returns to the trust be identified. So we're going to have to do an inventory of all of these lands that are SMAs, WMAs, SNE, you know, all of those things, and get an inventory of them. And then establish a process to have the trust compensated for those lands or the designation removed. So if we've said this is a WMA, this is an SNA, and it's school trust land, well, then it can never be used productively for the schools. And so the DNR would have to either, through state funds, compensate the trust fund for that or remove the designation so that the trust fund lands can go ahead and make those productive.
Senator Saxog, to that point.
Senator Carlson, so, and I think this is what you mean, when you say remove the designation, meaning you could exchange for other state lands that aren't in production like this would be.
Senator Carlson.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Saxog, that's exactly correct. Thank you for pointing out that's exactly correct. Then it also requires that the trust be compensated prior to any future designations that would prohibit long-term economic return. So if the DNR wants to designate a new parcel of land, an SNA or whatever, they would have to address this issue of the school's trust lands and compensation for that ahead of time if they wanted to. There may be some unique, very unique piece of land that they say, we can't duplicate this anywhere else, and so what we're going to do is we're going to either set aside this parcel over here instead of, or compensate whichever, and that would be fall under the advisory commission. You know, that would, all of that would be taken up by the commission and the director, and it would advise on all of that. So basically, Mr. Chair, I think that this really helps set in statute some of those things that would really help really help get more money to the trust lands.
Members, any questions? Hearing none, Senator Cruz, to the amendment. To hear your own.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, just to kind of touch on some of the high points here, I'm obviously in favor of removing the fire protection piece. I think a lot of folks are in agreement that that doesn't belong in the school trust lands, and I'm extremely excited about that. I'm also very happy with having the certification process go through the Legislative Citizen Permanent School Fund Commission that we're creating here. I have some questions with both that piece and with the second piece in how that would play into the role of the director here. But I think there's some other amendments out there that might make this a little bit more important moving forward. I like the fact that it does put that certification process in the hands of the commission, because I think one of the difficulties we've seen thus far is that the current certification process only compares numbers. It doesn't really delve into cost value per se. It's more of what I would call an accounting measure. And I think what we're looking for in that certification process is something that digs a little bit deeper and looks, compares to maybe the private industry and asks, are we truly getting the bang for the dollars that we're spending here? So for that reason, I'm very appreciative of that in your amendment, Senator Carlson. I see the language, that we've added here on 2.13 all the way down, defining these, defining the difference between the economic benefits versus the long-term sustainability of these lands. I personally question whether we need to add that language. I don't see it doing any harm, but here's why I question the need for it. I feel if you look at the definition of fiduciary and the obligations that legal definition carries with it, and if you look at how this is set in statute with the economic return being the primary focus here, I see that sustainability piece that it lists as secondary to that. You want to keep whatever that resource is sustainable, strictly for the purpose of that economic benefit. So I question whether we need that, but I don't see it doing any harm. I think it does clarify maybe a little bit. So with that, I would look on this as a friendly amendment.
Members, any further questions on the A6 amendment? Hearing none, Senator Carlson moves the A6 amendment to Senate File 1889. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one more amendment, and it is the A8 amendment.
We'll get that passed out, the A8 amendment. Senator Carlson offers the A8 amendment.
And, Mr. Chairman, while we're doing that, if I could get a page, I have something set aside here that I'd like to pass off. I actually did a run by school districts, kind of a comparison. If we can get the school trust lands to generate approximately $6 million more dollars, what that would look like in permanent dollars for each of those districts, and I think that's kind of a neat thing to look at.
Senator Cruz, that's kind of a per pupil number?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. You will see the per pupil number on there.
Good. Senator Carlson to the A8 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a good discussion with the author, with Senator Cruz, and we may have a slight difference of opinion about the management. I certainly agree with Senator Cruz's new commission that he's establishing in his bill. I think that's a great idea. And I really like the idea of the director, the oversight person. I think that's outstanding. So it takes that person totally responsible without having any undue influence from anyone else, except that I'm a little concerned that the structure could lend itself to another whole new agency. And I think we've been trying to reform government. We've been trying to downsize government, right-size government. And my concern was we're going down a road that I didn't think that we needed to go down. What this amendment would do, transfer the management of the school trust currently, the way the bill is drafted. It would start this new agency. It would manage the school trust lands, and it transfers management of the school trust lands from the DNR to this entirely new structure. I see it as an expansion of government that doesn't solve the problem. If we want the DNR to do something different, it's our job to just tell them what they need to do differently. And that's what we did with the A6. In those changes. So while the bill says that the new agency can contract back with the DNR for management, we don't know if they would do that if they think the DNR is a problem. And so there again, that's where that all of a sudden now we start with this another new agency that has its own foresters on the ground, its own mine management people, and on and on. And we already have good expertise there. What the amendment does is it leaves all of Senator Cruz's language in to establish the commission, but it establishes this trust fund advisor. Whether you want to call it an advisor, director, we can quibble about the name of that, but it is outside of the DNR, so not under DNR control. It provides advice to the legislature, to the governor, and to the commissioner. That person would be the watchdog for the school trust lands. And I think that's really what we're looking for, is that watchdog that's going to look over those trust lands and do what's best to get the most amount of money out of those lands into the corpus. It gives a trust fund advisor substantive duties and has the person staff. It's a staff person to the new commissioner, to the new commission. It funds the trust fund advisor with the commission from the trust fund revenues. Essentially, what it does is it puts this person in the MMB as opposed to in the DNR. We could put that person in admin. We could put them wherever. But part of the reasoning for putting him in MMB is that's where all the cost certifications come from. And so you'd have that advisor, director person right there at MMB. They would be responsible currently to Commissioner Showalter and to the governor. But they'd be right there where all the cost figures are going on, and they've got their finger right on the thumb of making sure that those numbers are right, that we're not overcharging the trust. So we eliminate this idea of starting a whole new agency. We still have management with the competent staff that we have of actually getting the most money out of the trees, out of the forest lands, out of the mining. Independent watchdog without creating a whole new bureaucracy. So that's what this would do.
Members, any questions? Senator Scoy.
Thank you, and I guess it'll be Senator Carlson. So after, if the A8 is adopted, the DNR continues to manage the school trust with the advice of the school trust lands advisor that is housed at MMB. But the DNR continues the management?
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scoy, that's correct. So in other words, if a school trust land is being managed right now in a certain way, the advisor looks at that and says, you know, we're not really getting that rotated as often as we could be for maximum value and sustainability. And so then the advisor comes back and says, we want that harvested sooner. We want that harvested 5 years sooner, 3 years sooner. And that's all in conjunction with the advice of the commission, this advisor, and in advising the DNR, we want that cut this year.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you. And to both Senator Cruz and Senator Carlson, and I guess you're going to have to answer the question, Senator Carlson, is who makes the final determination? But you know what happens with these public land issues is there's conflicting groups that want to use our public lands differently and for different purposes, and some of them think the economy of tourism is more important than the economy of logging. Some of them think the economy of the water quality is more important than the economy of mining. But at some point, somebody has to make a final determination, and it usually goes to the commissioner, to the governor, kind of, you know, the governor and down to the commissioner. And I don't know how this advisor is going to change what currently is going on with that decision-making, but if this leaves the management with the DNR and tries to give them some direction to maximize the money, I don't find much objection to that. But I'm just curious as how the advisor intervenes into that decision, because, you know, to be honest, what happens, I think, in the DNR, you get a lot of head-butting internally, and that kind of bubbles up to the commissioner, and if he can't figure it out, it bubbles up probably to the governor. And where does the advisor intervene into that decision-making
Senator
process?
Carl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's a great question, Senator Scoia. And the way I see that working is we have the commission, and we have the advisor, and then we have the DNR. And with the directive that we just passed in the A4 amendment of what we have to do to maximize the value of the land, if there's a question, should this trust land be used for mining? Should it be used for lakeshore leases? Should it be used for timber? That would be the director comes to the commission. They talk about it at their regular meetings, and it's determined that, you know, they'll do, you know, they can do, he or she can do that study and say, you know what, I really think that the best economical value for this piece of land is to lease it out or to mine it or to cut the timber. They come to that decision. Then that director instructs the DNR on that property that this has been our decision, that this is now going to be, we want this timber cut, and we want it cut in 30-year rotation, 50-year rotation, something like that. And then the DNR would do that.
Senator Scoia, to that point.
And Senator Carlson, what if the DNR commissioner doesn't want to do it that way and says the governor doesn't want to do it that way and decides not to do it? What authority does this person have to force their opinion that's different than the commissioner's opinion into action?
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scoia. It goes back to the statutes that we just put in here about the highest maximum use. So it would be a determination of this commission. What is the maximum, the best beneficial use of this land? And so then everyone has to abide by that. Certainly I would think that this advisor director would work in consultation with the commissioner. They're not going to work in a vacuum by any means. If there's a disagreement with the commissioner, I would guess that the commissioner or one of the directors, whether it's minerals or whether it's forests, would come up and testify to the commission and say, you know, well, this is what we think we could get the best value out of. And they'd have that discussion, and they'd come to a conclusion. I believe that would be handled amicably that way, with this in statute that they have to follow this directive.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Carlson. I think both of these are good amendments. The one we passed and the one that come up, I want to reiterate a couple of things. One of the things, we have to remember that it's only been 4 years, or it was 4 years ago that we passed the legislation that said any profits or that are passed out of the out of selling timber on school trust lands, it used to be up until 4 years ago, it would supplant general fund money that was in the education fund. And thanks to Senator Lynch and Representative Dietrich, that was changed. And so now any profits that come out of selling the timber don't supplant, they supplement the school trust fund. So we've been moving along here. It isn't like there's been something that hasn't happened here for a long time. And I think the first step that the DNR has taken, and I'm assuming that the new director would do it in the same way, the DNR, has taken school trust lands for the most part out of state parks because they don't have any particular. They have state parks have value to us, but they don't have. They don't generate any income. So I see, as you said, Senator, WMAs, SNAs, you know, all potential to be exchanged or traded out and raise the income of the school trust fund.
Any further questions? Senator Cruz, to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlson, I have a couple of thoughts about this amendment that I'd like to share. But before that, I guess a couple of questions. I know that when you talk about the forest rotation, the cutting rotation, some of that is dictated by statute. So I'm wondering if this new advisor position that we're creating is going to have the authority to make the decisions that are necessary to truly generate that profit.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cruz, actually rotations aren't set by statute. That's set by policy by the DNR. They, you know, it depends on what kind of a tree, what the tree is, you know, whether it's aspen, whether it's pine, whatever it is. And I know that there's some old growth policies and those sorts of things. But what we would set by statute is this maximum value. And so we have foresters at the DNR, and we have many people in the forest industry that understand what is the maximum value point, you know, and it could be maybe it's 30 years or 40 years, but that could change from year to year because maybe you get a couple of really terrible growing seasons. You know, so it's up to those foresters to know exactly, okay, they can look at that tree and say, okay, we know that in the next 5 years we need to get this cut so we can get new growth going and regenerate and get the maximum value. So it's not set by statute. It would be, again, it would go back to the statute that says highest use, the maximum value that's sustainable, so that we absolutely get every penny out of that piece of ground that we can for the school trust land to the maximum value sustainably.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlson. You know, I guess as I look at this amendment, and you and I have spoke about this, it substantially changes the legislation. I have some pretty severe reservations about this amendment, and here's my reasoning for that. I think you have an inherent conflict of interest anytime you commingle school trust lands with state-owned lands. I think you have an inherent conflict of interest in the fact that the Department of Natural Resources, for the most part, is charged with looking after state lands with a perspective of conservation and sustainability and preservation, whereas on the other side of that spectrum, school trust lands are fiduciarily supposed to be managed strictly for profit. And my concern rests in the fact that when you commingle those two, what we've seen happen in the past is it's resulted in underperformance of our school trust lands. I think right now that I look back on the past few decades of the way these trust lands have been managed, and it's quite apparent that we haven't been getting the job done. And I can speak to a couple of numbers. There's numbers in your packet. Perfect example is in 2009 when you're speaking about strictly the timber portion of the school trust lands, 98% of the profits were eaten up in the cost of generating those profits. So what that meant was only a 2% yield back into that trust account. I think that's some of the things that you run into when you start potentially treating these school trust lands like state-owned lands. They are not state-owned lands. They are lands that are dedicated strictly for the children of Minnesota. And, I think we need to be very, very cognizant of that.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Cruz, that's exactly why we passed the A6 amendment first, so that we know very clearly. We don't have to go back to a dictionary and interpret what fiduciary means. It's in statute. You will manage this to the maximum potential that that land can produce. That's why we specifically passed that amendment first, so we know clearly there's a very clear distinction. But at the same time, we can use the economies of scale that the DNR already has, the expertise that they have. We don't have to ramp up a department. We don't have to add a department. Have you ever been on a forestry tour, Senator Cruz?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlson, no, I have not.
I live in the forest, but I'm telling you, it was an enlightening tour. The work that our foresters do is phenomenal. And I know that there's some foresters that I know personally that when they see this language, they're going to go, yes, they've untied our hands to get the most value out of this. Because quite honestly, some foresters feel like their hands are tied because some of the things that come down with regard to eco-services and some other things. And so we have fabulous foresters. And they are ready to get the maximum out of that land. They're eager to do it. This unties their hands to do that.
Senator Scoy, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Cruz, you know, I'd caution you from reading too much into 2008's forestry returns. I mean, if you think back to what happened to the housing crisis, you know, in 2007, it really turned our logging industry around, and the forestry was geared up to log 3.5 million cords or whatever it was, and, you know, we're logging 1 million. So it took them a little while to react to the economic downturn. So I wouldn't read too much into that. And, you know, we also had a number of logging sales that got turned back to the state. They'd been bid out, and the loggers lost their contracts because these mills closed, and we went through a number of legislative initiatives to try to resolve that so we didn't have a bunch of loggers going through bankruptcy, but we also didn't damage the DNR too much through that time. I also want to kind of talk a little bit to the members about, you know, economics is all in the eyes of the beholder, and some people are going to take a 25-year view on cost and say it's more valuable to the state to have a forest for birds and hikers than it is for loggers. And this debate isn't going to go away because we changed some statute here that talks about economics. But my question is to Mr. Knopf. I'm assuming you drafted this amendment for Senator Carlson. And I'm just curious how many musts and shells are going to be in the bill at the end of this, because this is a very extensive amendment, and I can't do all the deletions and the lines and stuff in the amount of time of this committee meeting. So after this amendment is done, how many musts and shells are left in the 1889?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, what I'm having passed out right now is it's an unofficial engrossment of the A8 amendment. Now, it doesn't include the A6, but if you look at the GK0035 draft here, what it does is it shows you what it will look like when we're done. I'll pass it up, but I'll also, if you want, I'll go through quickly on the page and line and just kind of show you where different things are. First of all, since the A6 amendment has been adopted, you know, we have to draft these things. You overlook another amendment, you have to draft them to whether it's a standalone. So first of all, on line 1.2, that deals with the salary, because we're going to talk about the school lands advisor. On basically from the amendment, you'll want to delete 1.4 to 1.8, because those were amended by the A6 amendment, and so we won't be dealing with those in this amendment. Otherwise, it could be a little confusing. So those parts you want to remove from the amendment. Basically, if you look through about line 1.16, you're really just most of that is keeping the DNR administration. You're changing the name of the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee to the Permanent School Fund Commission. If you look at 1.17 to 1.19, you're talking about commission staffing. Instead of having staffing, the advisor will provide staffing, so the commission will not be hiring staff. Line 1.20 deals with there will not be director nominations from the commission. The next couple of lines.
I'm sorry, Mr. Trump.
I don't think what I have is numbered the same as what you
have. No, something's different.
He's going through the.
I'm talking, Mr. Chair. I'm talking from the A8 Amendment. I thought.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. My fault. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay. I was just going to show you on the amendment where everything is.
Okay.
And then, if you want to look through the, I guess I'm not sure what the process. I wanted to. I mean, I think you should adopt the page and line amendment to make sure that the history of what happened here is recorded, kind of. But I thought it'd be good to have the other document to kind of show you. But I can do this quickly. So, and then the next ones are more conforming amendments.
Which lines are you on?
I'm on 1.23 to 1.32 of it. And so basically, you're just these are just conforming amendments dealing with it. 1.33 to 1.34, these are just changing director to conforming. So that gets us to the end of the first page. Again, I want to do this kind of quickly because I don't want to waste a lot of time, your time on this. 2.2 is just dealing with the director location, and then we've got a number of conforming amendments through 2.7. And then this adds 2.10 to 2.12, the advisor qualifications. We're putting some qualifications for the and then we're also on 2.14 to 2.16, we're removing the four-year term. 2.18, we're providing duties. In subdivision 4 and then in subdivision 5 on 2.28, we're providing for cost certification of the advisor's activities. So the advisor's, the cost of the advisor that would be part of the certification. And then the remainder of page 2 are just conforming amendments, basically to keep this under management of DNR. I mean, that's the whole, most of this amendment is basically keeping the management under DNR, providing for the commission, providing for an advisor. Now, I think your statement or your question, Senator Scoia, was dealing with the shoulds and musts or whatever. You can see, I mean, the advisor is going to be advisory only. I mean, that's the name of the title of the person. The Department of Natural Resources will be, and I think the important amendment was the A6 amendment that is a real substantive change in the management of the lands. But otherwise, the lands will still be managed under this by the agency. And not a new organization managing them. It does keep intact, this amendment does, the Permanent School Fund Commission, and it does, but it puts the advisor under, and the advisor, again, is advisory only. I think that's about all I was going to say, unless you've got more questions on how that works. But you can see, I think, in this unofficial and very unofficial endorsement, what the bill will look like. Except you'd have to add in the A6 amendment. This does not engross the A6. So it'd be this plus the contents of the A6 would be how the bill would look when we're done.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, so on that, the A6. Deletes sections 3 and 4 and inserts a new 3 and 4. So it would that be the same thing we would do on the unofficial engrossment? Well,
Mr. Chair,
three
Senator,
and 4 and insert these?
No,
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, if you were going to look at it that way, what I would do is just before section 3 is going to be replaced by what's in the A6. I mean, we've got two different. And that's okay to do that, but you don't need the line numbers. And it actually would have been section 4 before. So basically, you're going to replace you're going to insert section 3 from the A6 amendment before the section 3 that's in there now. That'll become the new section 3, and the section 4 will replace section 3 in the GK 0035. I apologize for not being able to give it all to you, but I wasn't sure how this was all going to proceed, and I had to do two amendments that overlook the other because you don't know which ones are going to be adopted.
So section 3 that's on the A6 amendment, we would insert after line 2.3, and then we would delete the section 3 and insert it with the section 4 of the A6.
That's right.
I'm good.
Yes.
But Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I was not advocating a delete everything amendment to adopt the A6 and A8. That's just how it would look when we're done.
Yep, I understand. I just wanted to, because we had a 3 and a 4 and a 3 and a 4
right.
in both places, right. I wanted to make sure.
Senator Scoia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the meat of this now is that the duties are to advise the governor, The cost certification is done under 16A, and we're going to find out what that means in just a minute. And then when you go to the A6 amendment, the second, well, other than the prevention deletion, the real meat of it's on B, C, and D on the second page of the A6 amendment. Is that appropriate? Okay, thank you. And what is what is 16A.125, Mr. Knopf, where the cost certification is occurring?
Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's the general statute that deals with cost certification for forestry. Okay.
Senator Kelas.
Mr. Chair, so if I get this amendment right, MMB will be hiring one person to oversee this. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kelas, yes. Okay. And that person will also be advising the governor, the commissioner, the new commission. I think I said that. And then of course, basically they'll be providing the advice to the legislature.
Just to follow up
Senator
on that,
Kelas.
Will these duties need to be a full-time position?
I think, Mr. Chair, Senator Kelas, people assume that it would be a full-time position, that it would be
Senator
a high-level position.
Senator Carlson, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Kelas's point, the way it was set up right now in the governor's operation order, the commissioner of Department of Natural Resources was going to hire a full-time person to manage the trust lands. What all of this legislation and Senator Cruz's legislation is doing is saying we have a lot better comfort level for those trust lands if we have an independent watchdog. So it's really that person that the DNR would have been hiring, but we're going to put them in MMB, make them independent, and make sure that we have that oversight.
Members, any further questions to this very complicated amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kelas.
Yeah, one of the things I have to say, that one of the things that disturbed me about Senator Cruz's bill is the fact that we're
Senator Kelas to the amendment.
It is to that. One of the things that disturbed me about the bill was creating another bureaucracy. I think this fixes that. So I'm supporting this. So.
Okay. Thanks. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at the conflict of interest section, and on the unofficial engrossment, it's on page 5 in the middle of the page. And there's a sentence that says that a commission member may not be an advocate for or against a commission action or vote on. Oh, never mind. I got to the end of the sentence. Okay, so my other question is on A6, and what after we adopt or we deal with A8, I want to go back and ask a question about something
Certainly.
That's on the A6.
Okay. Any more to the A8 amendment? To the A8 amendment, Senator Cruz.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering. I know that Grace Kelleher is here from the Minnesota School Board Association, and I was wondering if maybe this would be an appropriate time. This is a pretty significant amendment for this legislation, and I would just want to get kind of the school board's opinion on this, if that would be okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I think so. Is she here? I'm sorry. We have her on the list. Ms. Kelleher, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Kelleher, right?
Kelleher, right, Mr.
There
Chairman.
You go. That's right. I'm sorry.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I work for the Minnesota School Boards Association, serving elected school board members from around the state. This is an issue that has been important to my for over 5 years. We started out as newbies to the world of environment and spent a lot of time learning and listening, and then ran into sort of a hurdle because the DNR uses that cost certification program, and the problem is at the end of the day they certify costs, and if they're inappropriate or should have been differently, the money's already spent. The idea really was the other bill, it would give us an opportunity to get in front of the spending and decide whether that was in the fiduciary duties for the trustee. And I really want to focus you on the duties as a fiduciary. I had a PowerPoint, but there's the second slide in talks about what a fiduciary does. And you, by law, are a fiduciary along with the commissioner of the DNR. And though he controls all the money in this cost and all the staff, you also have one. And that duty is to be single source, to be clear, uncommingle funds, be clear reports to the beneficiary. And we're asking you to continue to do that. And so we support Senator Cruz's original bill and feel this advisor position, though very well intended, we're afraid won't have the kind of authority to look in three lots that are stuck on Lake Superior that we can't sell, don't make any revenue off of, and don't yield anything. Boat shore houses that we have on lakes that continue to go for little or nothing rental. Hunting cabins around the state that we have that are given from family member to family member at very reduced rates. We just really want an advocate for the children in the state of Minnesota. Just one. I don't think Senator Cruz's bill lends to an implosion of any place, because I think the DNR and the commissioner certainly has been bold in what he's willing to do. But it's like turning a battleship around in a puddle. It's just not going to happen unless we change some of the underlying factors, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Senator Cruz, and then we have to move the 8-8 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll make this quick. I wanted to take a second to address some of Senator Scoy's comments. I think, first of all, you know, I would disagree that the legislation as originally written creates a bureaucracy. We're talking about one person, potentially with a staff of 4 to 5 here. I would hardly call that another branch of government, an 18th, department. I don't see it that way. We're talking about 5 individuals. I would also say that if you don't give this advisor some teeth, some ability to actually force the hand to make actual decisions, it doesn't, you can have the watchdog all you want, but that's all it is. It's a dog. It can bark. It can make a lot of noise, but it's not going to actually be able to affect the change. And I think the way we have it written right now in the legislation, this director would be able to utilize all of the economies of scale that Senator Scoy is concerned about being able to use. In the original legislation, we allow for that new director to work with the Department of Natural Resources, especially when it's in the fiduciary, in line with its fiduciary obligations to the school children to maximize that profit coming forward. Perfect example of when that would happen is in Cass County, where you have school trust lands that are surrounded by state-owned forest lands. Well, of course, in that case, it would make only common sense to utilize the Department of Natural Resources to care for those lands. So, with that, I know that, Mr. Chairman, you want to move forward on this. I want to respect that. I will simply say that I have concerns about this amendment, but I believe that the overall goal here is much more important. And to be perfectly honest, I would rather see something get done. I would rather see us move the needle, even if it's in a little bit. So at that, I'm kind of at the will of the committee.
Members, any more questions with regards to the A8 amendment? Senator Carlson renews his motion for the A8 amendment. All in favor say aye. I'm sorry, was it amended? As
Mr. Chair, I think that Senator Carlson should withdraw the line 1.4 through 1.8 of the amendment. Again, those were the sections that we dealt with in the A6 amendment, and I don't think we want to get any complications or confusion about what's going on here.
Senator Carlson.
So moved. So done.
That's also amended as
or
well.
Or whatever Senator Higgins usually says.
Through the A8 amendment.
I move what you said.
As modified, all members. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. Senator Cruz, are there any further amendments that we have here, I guess? Otherwise, Senator Cruz, you have some.
I have a question. Whoops.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Higgins has a question on A6.
Thanks. The conversation between Senator Scoy and Senator Carlson about the
irresolvable conflict between maximizing the funds and making sure that we have good conservation values, natural resources values. I'm wondering if we could have the DNR come up and tell us how they might manage the lands differently with this in the law. Would there be something different they would have to do, some other questions they'd have to ask, and policies they'd have to do?
We have Deputy Commissioner Shad here. Welcome to the committee, Senator Scoy. I'm sorry, Senator Saxog.
Well, I was just going to quickly say while the commissioner was coming up, or deputy commissioner, said one of the things, Senator, that we don't have any control over, and that's the price of wood. You know, and 4 years ago was at $60 a cord, and we're at $20 a cord now, and that makes a huge difference. Same cost, but, you know, that's going to make a difference. Of course, it could go up to 60, too.
Senator Scott, you don't have to ask a question.
No, but I want to comment just on this point of irreconcilable differences. You know, this history of this goes back a long time, and when Commissioner Merriam was commissioner of the DNR, there was nothing done with regard to these lands because he just thought the value of the land was intrinsically more than the value of anything else. And there were ag leases on some of these lands where the farming entities were trying to buy the leases out and replace them with other lands, do land exchanges or something. They were receiving $9 an acre, rent, which was hardly anything. But we just couldn't make any progress at all. This economic discussion that you're having, people can look at this completely differently, and 10 years from now, somebody might. Mm-hmm. So it's really difficult to tell where this is going to go from what we're doing here, because people view economics differently. But that was my only comment.
Mr. Shad, welcome.
Thank you, Senator.
To Senator Higgins' question, I believe she had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dave Shad, Deputy Commissioner at DNR, and first of all, just like to thank Senator Carlson, Senator Cruz for this very good discussion about the bill and some alternatives. The A8 amendment specifically addresses some of our concerns that we had with the original bill as trustee regarding some of the inefficiencies that would have been created by taking management of those lands, the day-to-day responsibility for that 2.5 million acres of land, away from an existing agency and creating a new entity. And our fiscal note had indicated between $2 and $3 million potentially of additional costs associated with creating that new entity. And so this change that's reflected in the A8 amendment addresses that concern, that fiscal concern that we had as a trustee, and we certainly appreciate that. To Senator Higgins' question, we have tried to clarify for our staff. There's been mention earlier today of an operational order that we've provided, that we've developed just recently. In fact, Commissioner Landwehr signed it just within the last 2 weeks, that attempts for the very first time to really define for the agency and for all of our staff what it really means to be a trustee, and what the Constitution tells us, what case law tells us, and what the statute tells us about how we deal with these conflicting values. And it was mentioned, I think, earlier that some of the language in the A6 amendment actually reflects language that's in that operational order. In most cases, we don't think there is a conflict. If we are managing for the long-term interests of the trust, timber, for example, we would not want to do something in the short term that would compromise the ability of that forest stand to produce revenue long term. And so we certainly wouldn't want to do something unsustainable as far as timber harvest goes and jeopardize long-term productivity of that site and the potential for that site to be harvested again and again and provide additional revenue to the trust. So in most cases, when we're dealing especially with forest management, we don't see that sustainability or long-term kind of natural resource interest in conflict with our responsibilities as a trustee. But when there is a conflict, in those rare cases where there might be a conflict, our trust responsibilities are foremost, and we need to figure out how to resolve that conflict. It might involve an exchange of land. It might involve buying out the trust, compensating the trust for not doing what's right for the trust, and so that's actually reflected in our operational order, and we agree with that.
Members, any questions? I have more of a comment than a question, Deputy Commissioner, and that is that the presentation when Senator Cruz was here earlier to this committee, Commissioner Landwehr was here, and I think it was pretty clear by the testimony at that time that there were some issues, or at least there was perceived some issues, and I don't think that there's any question that this particular issue certainly needs to be looked at, I asked him. I said, "What he thought about that?" I don't know if anybody recalls this, but he said, "We should always be looking to do things better in government in general." And I think everybody at the table agrees with that. And I just need to. I think I don't have to convey the message from Senator Cruz or anybody that this is being looked at, being monitored, and being somewhat scrutinized, and maybe it should be. So that's why you're seeing this legislation come forward, and I certainly hope that this works in the future, works for the timber industry, mining industry, as well as the DNR, and specifically, hopefully, it will create some more revenue for the school trust. And if that doesn't happen, and there's something else broken, I think... Senator Landwehr is going to, Commissioner Landwehr is going to have a knock on the door, and we're going to have to try and fix that. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner. So I think I heard you say you supported what was the meat of the A8 amendment. How about on the A6 amendment where this language B, C, and D, is the DNR supportive of that language also, where the commissioner finds irresolvable conflict between maximizing long-term economic return, protecting, do you support that language also?
Deputy Schett.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, we're seeing this language for the first time, but again, much of this language is actually reflected in the operational order that we've developed as direction to our own staff. The one piece there that is of immediate concern is on line 2.16 of the A6 amendment, and that is that requirement that by July 1st, 2016, the fund shall be compensated for all school trust lands that are designated or have some policy that prohibits long-term economic return. And that number is not a known number. We'd certainly have to inventory those lands, come up with some estimate of value, and then figure out options to do that. July 1st, 2016 seems a long ways off, but it's actually the biennium after next, the middle of the biennium after next. And so depending on the size of that number, that may not be real realistic. We have made very significant progress, in recent years in resolving some of those conflicts. I think Senator Saxog mentioned that we've been successful in exchanging out all the trust lands from state parks and getting those trust lands into a revenue-producing state. And we're chipping away at it, but to take care of all of those lands between now and July 1st, 2016 may not be realistic. It depends on the resources that are provided by the legislature, basically.
Commissioner Shedd, how long have you had the operational order out? How long since you've had that, the dust blown off of that? Or if it's new, how long ago was that established by the DNR?
Mr. Chairman, it was signed on February 23rd of this year by Commissioner Landwehr. We've been working on it for most of 2011. Mary McConnell, our assistant commissioner, has been working with a team of folks to really research this, talk to other states, and try to get some language that makes it as clear as possible for our staff what our responsibilities are as a trustee. We've also discussed this operational order with the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee. They've seen it. They concur with that. We've made some changes in the operational order based on some of the concerns that they had with some of the original language about creating a director, for example, within DNR. They wanted us to hold off on that until we had some additional discussion here in the legislature. So we think it's been well researched. It's been vetted with the advisory committee, and we think it's a pretty solid document.
Members, any further questions? Senator Donaldson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, again, want to thank Senator Cruz for your passion, and I want to thank Ms. Kelleher also for her passion and what we're going to do, with what this will do to bring more money from the school trust lands and get used for the school children as you would have that happen. And I just, I really want to commend Senator Cruz. Thank you.
Hey, members, any questions? If not, Senator Carlson, would you please move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would move that Senate File 1889, as amended, be recommended to pass and
state government operations.
Move to state gov. Referred to state gov.
Member, any further questions? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. Thank you, Senator Cruz.
It'll be an interesting conference. Going to be long.
That's oh what I told.
We are like.
I'm going to have a little adjustment from the schedule here again. Senator Gazelka has to leave here real quickly. So, Kathy Lewis, would you come forward as well from the DNR? And Senator Gazelka, 1541, Senate File 1541.
Mr. Chair, do you have the A1 amendment for this
piece of legislation? It's coming around right now, I'm being informed.
Mr. Chair, members, while that's being passed around, I can say that this is a working arrangement between Morrison County and the City of Motley. They want to transfer a piece of land that would be used for a park. The amendment is language that the DNR requested, and I will let them clarify what that's all about.
Welcome, Ms. Lewis, to the committee, to the A1 amendment.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Kathy Lewis, Lands and Minerals, DNR. We have reviewed the Morrison County proposal, and what we did is we provided some recommendations to correct statutory sites to meet the request of the bill so that they are accepting the provisions for the public water provisions and also for selling less than the market value. We also ask that there be language identified, which is what the purpose is, which is to provide for public use as a park. And the amendment does reflect that language, and we would say that we have no concerns after that.
Members, any questions to the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Both same sign. Senator Gazelle.
Mr. Chair, I have no testifiers. If there's no further questions, I think this is going to be laid over into a larger land bill, if I'm not mistaken.
We'll just lay it on the table so we don't have to worry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next.
If my...
Senator Saxon.
Chair, you only do the fourth line?
Sure.
Then?
jump right into both of them. First Senator Saxog, Senate File 1479.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. 1479, I have an A1 amendment that I'd like to move.
Being passed out, Senator.
Okay, great.
To the A1 amendment.
The amendment will establish an easement on the property by the county to take care of a logging road issue that the DNR and the county need before selling some land.
Ms. Lewis, would you like to comment to the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, DNR identified this issue during its review. We contacted the county, and they are in agreement. And this easement will be to the county itself, and they will be able to maintain it as a public road as currently private and public entities are using the existing forest road.
Members, any questions to the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any further testimony?
1479, I was just going to give you a little more of a rundown
sure.
here,
mm-hmm.
a couple of sentences. This is a private sale, tax forfeited land to Great River Energy to build a substation near the city of Northome. This substation is crucial to making sure the city has reliability in its utilities. The county DNR and the Great River Energy all agree to the language. In your package should be a county board resolution and a letter from the DNR supporting this bill. For those of you who don't know where Northome is, it's in the far southwest corner of Coochaching County.
That's in Minnesota, correct?
Minnesota, USA.
Members, any questions? Hearing none, that will also be laid over. So to the next one, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1627.
That's correct, 1627.
1627. It's a request from Itasca County to do two private land sales for parcels of tax forfeited land that have small encroachment issues. The county and the DNR approve the sales. There should be a resolution and an approval letter in your packet.
Ms. Lewis, to the. Do you have any testimony?
Mr. Chair, members of DNR reviewed the bill and has no concerns about it.
No questions. Any further questions at all about Senate File 1627? Hearing none, that too will be laid over. Thank you, Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate File number 1591 for Senator Kubley. This is a piece of land in Big Stone County that the county believes would be best served the land management interests if it was returned to private ownership. I believe the DNR has no objection to this, and I would ask that Senate File number 1591 be laid over for inclusion in the land bill.
Ms. Lewis, any comments at all?
Mr. Chair, members, no, we have no comments.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Scoy.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chair.
That will be laid over.
He's here.
Senator Tomasoni. Welcome, Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman, we have some beautiful colored handouts, Mr. Chairman.
We like pretty handouts.
Some history.
Does that mean it's already decided if they're in color?
Would you like to just include it without me explaining it?
Okay, to Senate File number 1504, Senator Tomasoni, and you're handing out some material, is that correct?
Yes, I have it right here if somebody would like to grab it, Mr. Chairman.
It should be pretty easy. We've only got one side that's got members other than Senator Higgins sitting by our lonesome over there.
Yes.
Move over, Linda.
I'm not sure either what happened there.
Ms. Allery's here on this side.
Chairman, what you're going to get is the map you're going to get is going to show you a whole bunch of different color things that this particular bill is pertaining to, and what it's doing is showing you where all the school trust lands are that are on lakeshore properties on these two lakes that are mentioned in the bill. And what the bill suggests is that that we buy the lands that are on lakeshore and that we put the money, the sale of the land goes into the school trust fund for the kids. The rationale behind it is that years ago we were forced to exchange 210 acres for 1,154 acres of lakeshore, and that was in order to do the Lease Lakes lot sale, and then we paid $18 million for the Lake Vermilion Park to U.S. Steel, and we have all of this trust fund land on these lakeshores that are unproductive and not producing any kind of funds. And by buying these lands and putting the money into the trust funds, they'll now become productive for our school kids, and as a result of the language in the bill, be available to the public also to use the lakeshore on the public sites, because there's only one lot that's being bought on each area of the lakeshore, so it doesn't go real deep. I know that Senator Limmer has asked for this in judiciary as a result of the eminent domain part of the bill. And I don't know if there's any questions by the committee, but if you'd like a better explanation, I can keep going.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
So, Senator Tomasoni, are you selling, like, all the pink land and all the blue land and all the green land? Help me out here.
The green is the part that's not involved here. If you look on the parts that are involved are where it says school trust land. It's not University of Minnesota trust land, just school trust land. So it would be the pink and the green and the blue. And it's just lakeshore. It's not the entire lot that you see, and it would open up access to the public on these lots, and it would end up putting money into the school trust land as a result of these purchases. And so these lands, I believe they're all tax forfeited right now. Or no, they're state property, I think.
Senator Tomasoni, that question I have is I see in sections D and E you plan on purchasing these lands from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And Senator, have you brought this before the Outdoor Heritage Committee?
I think that was the next step after I got through Ms. Senator Limmer's committee, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I know we have somebody here from the Executive Director. Would you please come forward? And when he's doing that, when Mr. Becker's coming forward, the document you sent along with us, I believe, is the approximate price tag, can I say, or the approximate value that...
Mr. Chairman, this was this happened several years ago. If you look on the St. Louis County line, what happened was that was back when we were doing the Lease Lake lot sales, and so at the time, in order to get the Lease Lake lot sales, DNR wanted to exchange land for land, and so the land that was exchanged, there were 210 acres in St. Louis County that was exchanged for 1,154 acres of lakeshore property that you see on this map. And the price tag in here is whatever the price was for the per foot price of the purchase of the Lake Vermilion State Park that was done recently as a result of the bonding bill.
So I'm really confused.
Mr. Becker, welcome to the committee. Could you please address please identify yourself, please, and then address the procedures and whatnot that you have for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. I think this is a first, that I've ever seen anything like this. So could you give us a little idea as to the policies and procedures that you go through?
Mr. Chair, yes, I am Bill Becker, the Executive Director of the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. The council hosts an annual competition for recommendations for appropriations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The applications open in the spring. They'll be open this coming April, and they close the 30th of June, in this case 2012, and that would be four funds that would be made available in the first year of the next biennium. all of the funds that are available in the current biennium have been included in recommendations in a bill that you passed out of this committee. I haven't seen a fiscal note on this bill, so I don't know what the cost is, nor am I certain where they would come from. The one thing that I would say to the bill is that the Constitution requires that the money be spent to protect, restore, or enhance habitat, to make a long story short. And I think that one has to determine what threat these lands are under that we're protecting them from. That would be the advice I would give the council if they were to be given the opportunity to consider this proposal.
Members, any questions of the executive director? So, Mr. Becker, what you're saying is probably it's even questionable whether the funds from the Outdoor Heritage, Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council could be used for this because of a possible constitutional issue. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I think it's worthy of debate, the question.
Mr. Chairman, okay. I think...
Senator Tomasoni.
I think the purpose is stated on line 1.7 is exactly what the Lasard Sam's Council does. So that would most likely make it eligible. It's a matter of whether or not the money's available and whether or not we can get the Lasard Sam's Council to give the money. But in the long and short of it is that we're making some lands available to the public that aren't currently available and also putting money into the school trust fund for the kids. So it's a pretty interesting bill.
Certainly, in theory, a good idea. Mr. Becker, would you comment to the lines 1.17? Does that meet the requirements the way you see it?
Mr. Chair.
What did you say, 1.7? 1.7, I'm sorry.
I think that it would be the duty of the council to determine whether there was a clear and present threat to protect to these lands that need to be protected, so that they needed to be protected. Let me put it another way. For example, there are school trust lands in the boundary waters that are managed under the federal regulations. It's difficult to think that the habitat on those lands are under threat. So I would certainly question whether or not the Outdoor Heritage Fund could be used to protect, so to speak, school trust lands in the BWCA. And have so testified in front of the advisory committee for the school trust fund lands. This is a little bit different situation. These are not lands that are otherwise protected and could be sold or something like that. So I think it's up to the council to listen to the merits of the proposal and make a recommendation.
Senator Tomasoni, have you thought about bringing this to the council at all? I know there.
Oh, I was hoping you'd send it there.
Well,
And Mr. Chairman, I don't.
I'm very cautiously asking these questions because I am, as you know, a member of that council, and I've never seen this proposal before. And Senator Saxog and I both are sitting on that now, and generally, it's been. I think the policy's been working very well. Moving the bill now the fourth year. In fact, just Tuesday we moved the last one, or the most recent one, and it's a yearly appropriation, and it works very well. That's what the committee was set up to do. And we get upwards of about anywhere from $300 to $400 million worth of proposals in some years, and with about anywhere between $97 million to appropriate. So it has worked very, very well. I'm not comfortable at all with moving forward to this with the sections D and E. If the author would entertain taking those out and maybe go to work on that, through the procedures that have been set up, that's what I would sooner do.
Mr. Chairman, I understand your concern about D. What is your concern about E?
Mr. Knopf, can explain that to him.
Mr. Chair, E is directly related to D. It's basically providing an exception if you're going to use D. So there'd be no sense in leaving E if you're going to delete D.
Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Knopf, is that just the statutory reference there, or is it the whole section?
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, the statutory reference basically is you're exempting them from current acquisition restrictions that are for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. That section or paragraph E there would only be if you're going to use Outdoor Heritage. You would only need that if you're going to be at least the first sentence. And the question is whether you want that other sentence on. I suppose you could just delete the first sentence of E. If you still wanted to leave that other sentence.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
For my seatmate, I will move Senate file number 1504. Be recommended to pass and referred to the Judiciary Committee. I will incorporate the deletion of item D in the first sentence in item E.
Yes, to amend that.
That has to be amended, is that correct?
Yeah, he made the amendment.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, so you are moving an amendment to delete lines 1.21, 1.22, and then delete everything after the paren after E, and then everything on line 1.23, and then in 1.24, deleting everything before the capitalized word land.
Yes, that's correct. And then I would
move to Senator.
Yep, that's my motion.
To Senator Scoy's motion. Senator Saxon.
And Senator Tomasoni, would be your intention then to apply to the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council?
Well, I would have to now.
Well, and Senator Tomasoni, I would certainly encourage you to do that.
Yeah, but absolutely.
I'm not discouraging you from doing that. I'm just encouraging you to do what everybody else has got to do and has done in the past, and has been very successful. At least, it certainly had tremendously bipartisan support. In fact, last year I think it was 60. How many are we? I think it was 80 to nothing. So in the Senate, no, it wasn't quite that, but it was 65-0, I believe, so or 64. So, and it is a good system. It does work, and we certainly encourage you to bring it.
Mr. Chairman, we do need more senators in rural Minnesota, so 80 would be a good number.
Well, every place except the Northeast, I would agree to that. To Senator Scoy's amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Very good. Senator Tomasoni, any further discussion on the bill?
No, I think we just need a motion. I think Judiciary has asked for it due to the eminent domain in the bill. Is that correct?
Exactly. Senator Scoy moves Senate File 1504.
Mr. Chairman, do we need the eminent domain?
As amended, to move to the to pass and move to the Public Safety Judiciary, where we will deliberately take many, many hours to no.
And change a lot of things.
I've been to the Judiciary a couple of times, and they like to monkey around with the is's and the ifs and the ands, and I just don't even know if I want to go there. Is there any way to take this eminent domain out of this bill and not go to Judiciary, Mr. Chairman, and be included in your bill?
No, I don't believe there is. But to Senator Scoy's motion to the bill, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm really happy about this. I thought I was going to be here at midnight tonight.
Well, you can certainly hang around till midnight if you'd like.
Trying to get it moving along.
Where are we at? Senator Sieben.
What about Senator Sieben? Can we do that? Is she
here? Senate File 1655. Senator, welcome to the committee. Is this your first time in front of this committee this year?
It is my first time, Mr. Chair. Nice to be here.
Very good. Welcome.
Thank you. So this legislation would allow a small parcel of land. It's under 4 acres of land that borders the Mississippi River to be sold in a private sale from Washington County to willing buyer, which happens to be the refinery that is right next to this property. The reason the property is, the county wants to sell the property is because there used to be a swing bridge that was just north of the parcel of land and crossed from the Dakota County side of the river onto the Washington County side. So, and because it's borders the Mississippi River, that's why the this legislation, their special legislation, needed to sell the land. So I'm happy to stand for questions.
Very good. And Ms. Lewis, would you come forward, please, from the DNR? And again, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the DNR has reviewed the bill and has no concerns.
Okay. Any further questions, members of Senate File 1655? Hearing none, that will be laid over. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Finish up this side of the paper so I can do one.
Do you still have another one?
He's here.
2160.
Oh, is he here?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh.
He snuck in the back.
All right.
Yeah, he's got three.
It's hard to sneak you by.
Senator Bach, Senate File 2116. Senator Scoy, I did skip you. You didn't mind that at all?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe we want to deal with this. I'm just going to lay Senate File 1769 on the table. I have had conversations with the folks up there, and they're pretty much ready to go with their route, so they're going to try for some legacy monies. They think it'll be a little faster. So just lay 1769 on the table or not hear it or whatever, but I'm not going to do anything with it today.
Just withdraw it, okay.
Just withdraw it.
Senate File 1769 has been withdrawn. Senator Bach, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just I couldn't help but overhear the conversation about how many senators voted last year. Senator Tomasoni and I have a little difference on that. I'm actually an author on a bill to reduce the size of the Senate to 56.
How's that going for you, Senator?
Not be that bad an idea.
I think I actually was on one of them at one time, too. That's not a bad idea, actually.
Rangers.
Well, that wouldn't reduce this committee, though. This committee is very important. We'd have to have this many on here all the time.
Very important in my district, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, which bill would you like to start with?
I believe it's 2116, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 2116 is the St. Louis County Lands Bill, and I believe there are two amendments to get it into shape, the A1 and the A2.
Okay, we'll get those passed out. If you'd like to speak to those amendments. A1?
Mr. Chairman, the A1 is a small parcel in the city limits of Virginia that the city would like to sell at private sale. That's what I know about it.
Small parcel?
St. Louis County is here.
Okay. Ms. Lewis, to the A1.
Mr. Chair, members, this bill has been heard in the House, and the DNR has no concerns about it. They did negotiate the price difference from what was originally introduced prior, and so there was agreement reached between the city and the county and regarding the price value that was specified in this bill. So that shows up in this amendment.
Members, any questions? Senator Bach, would you like the testifier to come forward?
No. Not if we don't need him, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator, you need someone to offer the A1 amendment. Senator Scoy offers the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Up, Senator, to the
A2
amendment.
Chairman, I think the county probably will need to come up with this, and I think Ms. Lewis has probably seen this too. This allows St. Louis County to sell some currently leased lakeshore lots that are tax forfeit and deposit the proceeds into their environmental trust fund. And I guess we'll probably have Ms. Lewis speak to it first. I know that
Ms. Lewis
seen it before.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, the DNR has reviewed the bill, and we have no comments on it.
And to your witness. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, John Ungaro, Director of Intergovernmental Relations for St. Louis County. This amendment is essentially to allow St. Louis County to sell up to 278 lakeshore lease lots that the county has. These are tax forfeited lakeshore lease lots, and we want to follow a similar process that the state of Minnesota did with their lakeshore lease lots over a decade ago, as well as Itasca County did just less than a decade ago. So it's modeled after that legislation. The county board is unanimously in support of it, and we'd appreciate your support.
Sir, could you tell me what the approximate value of these lakeshore lots are and what that's going to do for your – that's going to certainly help you out tax-wise, isn't it, property tax?
Yes, Mr. Chair. As part of the legislation, it will require us to do an appraisal on those lots. We don't know offhand what the approximate value is, but I do remember when we had a similar number, a very close to similar number of lakeshore lots that happened in St. Louis County of the former state lakeshore lease lots. And when that transaction occurred in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was approximately $5 million of revenue that came into St. Louis County. And as Senator Bach referenced, we put that funding into an environmental trust fund. And the revenue from the or the interest from that corpus goes towards some of the septic loan program and similar clean water type activities for our lakes.
Good. Members, any questions? Senator Saxon.
Well, I was just going to comment on what Mr. Angaro said, and he commented that Itasca County had a similar program, and they had an environmental trust fund, too, that was very successful in helping septic systems and that type of thing.
It does sunset after 5 years.
Sunsets after 5 years. Everybody understand that?
Yep.
That's okay.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure that everybody was clear that they have 5 years to do this under this law. I mean, they could come and get it extended, but they have 5 years. It doesn't provide a specific number of acres or locations, but it says that they need to, if they're going to do this, do it within 5 years.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that we understand that, and certainly from our experience 10 years ago, we know it's going to take more than a couple of years, but we did it last time within 5 years, so we're hopeful to be able to do that again.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, just to counsel, I noticed these two amendments, the A1 that we adopted and the A2 that we're considering on line 1.2, they both insert to the same page and same line, so if counsel can just adjust that.
Mr. Chair, this is how it's done, Senator Bach. yes, you can't. One amendment has to overlook the other amendment. In engrossing, they know how to deal with this. It's just a matter of what order they put them in.
Okay,
it works just fine.
It looks a little odd.
It looks a little odd, Mr. Chair. And people make comments about it once in a while, but that's just the way it has to be done.
Senator Skoy, office of the A2 amendment.
Move the A2 amendment.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senate file 2116 as amended. There are, in the original underlying bill, there are a number of parcels here in St. Louis County to be offered at public sale and a couple parcels at private sale in the bill. And members, just seems like we're selling a lot of stuff here. You just need to remember that St. Louis County is about 150 miles from north to south. It's probably, I don't know, I've never counted the lakes, but probably has a couple thousand lakes in it. So there's just a lot there. So it looks bigger than, put it in context with the size of the county.
Senator Bach, what's the population of that county?
About 200,000 people. But about 60% of the land is publicly owned.
Right. Members, any questions? Thank you, Senator. We'll be laying these on the table.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have two others. Which one would you like first?
2132.
Senate file 2132 is a bill for Lake County in my district. If you think of the towns of Silver Bay and Two Harbors up the North Shore, that's Lake County. That's over 80% publicly owned. And Mr. Chairman, there are two parcels in this bill requested by Lake County. The department has raised some objections over the parcel identified on line 1.14. I actually concur with the department on that. those objections, and the department is going to work with the county to identify some other land and some kind of an exchange. So if someone would move, Mr. Chairman, to delete line 1.14 and renumber, that would be my intent.
Okay. Senator Carlson would do that. Mr. Knopf, would you repeat that as best you know?
Mr. Chair, on line 1.13, we delete the colon, delete line 1.14, and then on line 1.15, delete the two and the parents, because basically this is going to be, it's just going to be one tract here, so we don't need any numbering on this.
Okay. To Senator Carlson's amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Both same side. Good. So any further discussion on Senate file 2132? Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment addresses our concerns. It's an area with extensive mineral exploration right next to the platinum palladium resource. So we recommended that it be pulled and has been.
No further questions. We'll lay that one on the table, Senator Bach. The next one is 2245.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 2245 is a 40-acre parcel that currently has a cabin lease on it. And Lake County would like to sell it at private sale at the appraised price to the current cabin leaseholder.
Okay, Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, members, the DNR has reviewed the bill and has no concerns.
Members, any questions? Senate File 2245. Hearing none, this will also be tabled. Thank you, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee.
On the agenda, Senator Howell. Senate File 2175.
He's here.
I guess he's not here. We will move down to...
Bump until next year.
Yep. Bump until next year.
We're with you. Next year.
Yeah.
Carlson. Senator Carlson.
Yeah, two. Yeah, two. Oh,
I'm sorry. Bill. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I got to do Senator Limmer first.
Is he here? Senator Limmer here?
Hoffman will go.
We do have somebody here, Senator Hoffman. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was hiding.
This is going to be 2004.
Yep.
Senate File 2004. Welcome to the committee. And you have a witness with you today?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of witnesses here today.
Okay.
So before we start, I do have an amendment, I think, should have been brought to the committee.
Okay. This is the A-something amendment here. Is it the A-1 amendment, Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hoffman, I've got two amendments. One would amend Section 2 of your bill. The other one takes out Section 2. I'm assuming you want the one that takes out Section 2. Is that
the second amendment, correct?
Yes. So it would be the A-2.
Okay, we'll hand that out, Senator, to the A-2 amendment.
I actually need a copy of it,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
I'll wait for that. Scared everybody away here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
I'll move the A-1 amendment.
The A-2 amendment. To the A-2 amendment. Mm-hmm. Oh, 1 second yet.
Just a second, Mr. Chair. I don't think the amendment's correct. This is the first time we've seen it. It's too long. Mr. Chair, the A2 amendment isn't actually correct. Page 2 on line 1.2 of the amendment says delete Section 2. That's not our intention.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, I did not draft this amendment. Ms. Doyle did and had to leave. She's in another committee.
You could probably handle this by way of oral amendment.
Yeah, we can. I thought that they did, because Section 2 is just adding or sale, and it was my understanding that or sale was to be removed from the bill.
Just the or sale was to be removed from the bill, but not the whole Section 2.
Well,
am I misunderstanding this?
Mr. Chair, if you remove the terms or sale from Section 2, there's no reason to do Section 2 because that's just current law. It means that current law would stay as current law in that subdivision of law. So that if you're taking or sale out from everything in Section 2, you don't need Section 2 because it just stays.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
That makes sense.
Senator Dames.
So, Mr. Chair, I should probably withdraw my motion.
No.
Your motion is still good.
Okay.
To the A2, Senator, you're okay with that? Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
We just need to remove the language. It was confusing to some other entities in the state, so we just took it out.
Okay. Very good. It's been cleared up. Any further discussion on the A2? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, your bill is in order, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate File 2004 will set standards for the diversion of water as provided for in the Water Allocation Priorities Statute. It is designed to bring current Minnesota statutes in line with the U.S. constitutional authority, clarify the role of the Minnesota legislature, and provide protection for this vital resource of the state of Minnesota to the maximum extent available under the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. And with that, I would like to turn the rest of the testimony on this bill over to Peter Belega, and he will talk about the case law and some of the reasons why this got brought to my attention.
Mr. Belega, welcome to the committee.
Oh, am I on?
You're on.
Okay. Yes, my name is Peter Belega. Thank you for this time, and thank you, committee members, for your attention to this. We just need to clarify a couple of things. I've tried to get around to everybody, but for those of you I missed, I apologize. The situation is that we, as our current case law and as our current statutory law in Minnesota sits with regard to this issue of diversion, we are unconstitutional in two ways, and so we just wanted to bring our law into constitutional potential scrutiny here. Number one, one of the things we are doing is we are striking in 103G261, we're striking subdivision F that says diversions of waters will ultimately be discouraged if they're going out of state. This is in contradiction to the case of Sporhays versus Nebraska. It's a 1982 U.S. Supreme Court case, and so we want to make sure that we strike this section because the U.S. Supreme Court said water is an article of commerce, and as an article of commerce, if a state wishes to prevent it from being transferred to another state or out of state, and that is the sole reason, is that it's because it's simply being transferred, then the state's action in that regard would be considered to be a violation of the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. So we have to strike that. The other thing is what we have added is in the section 103G265 that says any diversion greater than 2 million gallons per day must have approval by the legislature. That's a good thing. Unfortunately, we didn't state anything more at the time this piece was passed. And again, the U.S. Supreme Court in a 1966 case, Altus versus Carr, said that that type of language with nothing more is unconstitutional. The court said that obviously states do have an interest in water, and they have an interest in protecting water. And the court set out three particular items that the legislature can consider. Those items we have added, and they are at lines 2.23, 2.24, and 2.26. The court said that the legislatures of any state may consider if the requested diversion is reasonable, if the requested diversion is not contrary to conservation and use, and if the requested diversion is not detrimental to public welfare. So with that, what we're doing is we're taking our case law We're following the United States Supreme Court and the constitutional law. We're amending our statutory law, which brings us into compliance, and which this ultimately means is that should this kind of case ever find its way to the legislature in the state of Minnesota, that the legislature will then have the necessary muscle to provide the necessary oversight in any kind of diversion case. Right now, unfortunately, we lack that muscle, and any attempt would be deemed unconstitutional in all likelihood.
Mr. Lega, the section or line 2.8 refers to Canada. Can you comment on that a little bit? Is it the same?
Basically yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's the same. Any effort to send, if there is any attempt to stop the diversion of water outside the state, whether it's to Canada, to Mexico, or to North Dakota or Iowa, it all is the same issue. It is all an issue of the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution. And so the state cannot simply say, we're not going to divert water because it's going out of state, end of story. At that point, it's a violation of commerce. The United States Supreme Court gets involved. It's a constitutional issue. But a state can consider these three elements that we've added, and therefore the legislature, with this amended bill, will have the necessary muscle to oversee any effort should that come up in the future.
Did you have issues or did you have constituents that come forward? I think you may have said that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I think actually probably, you know, going back 10, 15 years, there have been issues out in western Minnesota concerning the potential diversion of water either to Texas or someplace else. And I did have members of the agricultural community, and in fact we've got some as witnesses here, that had approached me and expressed concern about this possibility because they had been told that the way our statutes were presently set, that there was nothing that could be done should water be, you know, should there be an issue to divert water out of the state of Minnesota. And so they asked me to do the research on this. I've done that, and I think that there's a way that we can fix this and make sure that any legislative action in the future, in fact, is constitutional and has the necessary authority.
And members, I should also add, and maybe you did, Mr. Belega, there's a an Otter Tail County resolution in the packet here that encourages this legislation. That's accurate.
Yes, sir, that is correct. And in fact, one of the members of that committee commission is here as a testifier.
Members, do you have any questions at all about the bill? Senator Higgins.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess it's probably a dumb question, so I shouldn't ask it, but diverting water means like changing the flow of a river, or what exactly does that entail?
Mr. Chair,
it could, and Senator Higgins, it could mean many different things. For example, if somebody decided they wanted to drill wells and then lay pipe and then ship water to Grand Forks or ship water across into Iowa, that would be one method of diversion. There are many different ways that diversion could take place, but we aren't expanding that in any fashion. We're simply concerned about if, as I've tried to explain at different times, if the marble should drop in whatever fact pattern it might be, and it lands in the legislature's lap that this particular statute needs to be called into play. The commissioner of the DNR says that we need to take a look at this, and it ends up at this body. We just want to make sure that whatever this body does meets constitutional scrutiny.
So I think Senator Higgins has got a good question. If the river would be to be diverted, I think that was your question, would be gouged out and dredged out and diverted into North Dakota.
That would be one manner.
That would be one, then.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
All right. Yes, sir.
And also, I think it should be known, and you probably know this as well, sir, that the Great Lakes has a compact, I believe, that this came up some years ago, and I don't remember what administration it was. Maybe you were around back then, Greg. Maybe you can comment to that, but I think at that time it was said there was an awful lot of want of our Great Lakes water to be diverted or to be sold out of our state, and they put a stop to that. And So I do know that history, and I'm belonging to the Great Lakes Commission for the short period that I have. So any questions at all, or would you like any other testifiers to come forward, Senator?
Mr. Chair, I do have some testifiers from out of my district, and as we all know, I live quite a ways away, and they drove. So I would like to have them have
certainly
their voices heard.
Certainly, have them come forward.
If you want to leave, and then I'll introduce the first testifiers. Commissioner Doug Hipsch, he's part of Otter Tail County Commission, and he's here to speak in favor of the bill.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Like Senator Hoffman said, my name is Doug Hipsch. I'm an Otter Tail County Commissioner, business owner, and farmer. We grow mainly turkey and cattle. We employ about 60 people in and around the Perm area. As you know, Otter Tail County is located in west central Minnesota. We have a population of about 58,000 spread out over about 2,200 acres. The majority of our jobs are involved in tourism and agriculture along with service. In tourism, besides all of our resorts, construction companies, and seasonal retail, we are also the home of Lund Boats and Shoremaster Lifts and Docks. Our population is radically higher in the summer months, and all of our lakes are connected to the aquifer. If we pump out our aquifers, we risk lowering lake levels, shrink spawning beds, and dewatering wetlands. This risks public welfare of lake property owners, businesses, and Minnesota's natural environment. But more importantly, it's contrary to the conservation of water. In agriculture, besides growing the normal row crops, our region is also a large producer of dairy, meat, and poultry, especially turkeys and beef cows. We further process turkeys at Pelican Rapids and support hatcheries and feed mills. We have grown and processed many acres of edible beans, and our potatoes are processed locally in Perm at Barrel of Fun Potato Chips and in Park Rapids at Lamb Weston Frozen Foods. Bongard processes milk into winning cheese in Perm, Minnesota. Tuffy's Pet Food exports food all over the world. The point is all of these processes require pumped water. For these reasons, we conserve and use our water resources. The water is used and recycled back into the aquifer. Unfortunately, more and more of our foods are grown and processed elsewhere, requiring high transportation costs. Otter Tail County is a good example of a food system that is locally based and competitive. Our strategic reserve of water serves to protect our food security in our country. Minnesota's strategic reserve of water is the most limiting resources in the world, and having water is what gives Minnesota a competitive advantage. Unlike oil and minerals that are mined and shipped and sold, our water is recycled and conserved. We pump the water on demand, use it to live and grow our food, and then it percolates down into the aquifer. As the world population grows, demand for food will soar and create more scarcity for water. If we build a system to transport water, the sale and diversion of water will escalate over time. Legal battles may be fought over water, and the water will flow to the power, not to the conservation. If it is not regulated, private businesses can monopolize Minnesota's water. Instead of diverting water to other regions, citizens should relocate to Minnesota and share the resources here. If our water resource is pumped away, our jobs will go with it. So please support our bill. It would give the legislature the constitutional power to approve the diversion and sale of water. We need to be in charge of our strategic resource. Thank you for allowing me to testify
today.
Thank
you very much. Any questions, members? What portion of Otter Tail is water?
A big portion. We've got 1,000 lakes.
So it's lakes.
More than 1,000 lakes, a big portion of it. Okay. And our aquifer, I mean, we pump water up and we use it, and it goes right back down.
Sure.
So. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have two other testifiers that I could
have. Sure.
So,
bring them up, please. Introduce them, please.
Mr. Norm Krause and Mr. Dale Shook. You can move up.
A couple of familiar faces. Welcome to the committee. Who would like to start? So.
Thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dale Shook. I'm from Staples, Minnesota, about 150 miles northwest of here in Wadena County.
Todd County.
We're Wadena County.
Okay, you are.
Right across the line.
All right, we'll call it both then. Right.
Okay. We'll probably be one county someday anyway. I farmed my entire life except for went to college at NDSU and graduated with animal science and ag education degree, and then I taught school for a couple of years. And I've been farming the rest of the time along with my wife, Renelle. We raise irrigated corn, soybeans, edible beans, and wheat mostly, with some other minor crops. We farm about 4,500 acres, and of which about 95% is irrigated. And without irrigation, we wouldn't be farming anymore. We lived in the central sands of Minnesota, very unique place. We can grow excellent crops, but the thing that we're missing is water at the right time. We get enough rain each year to raise a bumper crop every year. However, it doesn't come exactly when we need it. So that's where the irrigation comes in. We can have 2 or 3 inch rain, and 3 days later we have to turn the irrigators on because our soils can only hold enough water for hold about 1 inch of water in the root zone. The rest of that water percolates the soil. It's held in our wetlands, and it's available for irrigation. So it's all a timing thing. Several of the pieces of land that we developed within the last 10 years have been land that has been idled for 5, 10, 30, 40 years. It was once farmed, but wasn't farmed anymore because it was dry land. And irrigation has made a lot of things possible in our area and provided a lot of jobs and has been very good for our county as well as the state of Minnesota. Without irrigation, we wouldn't be farming anymore. Just no way it could happen. The production costs are so high to put in an acre of corn nowadays between seed and chemical and fertilizer and what have you, you couldn't afford to continue to farm if you didn't have a good chance of getting the rain. The sandy soils we have will produce a fantastic crop, all you have to do is add the water at the right time. So thank you for this opportunity.
So irrigation is certainly something that's very crucial for your livelihood.
Definitely. My son is joining me on the farm now. He'll come full-time this year. And without irrigation, it wouldn't be possible, and as well as thousands of acres. I believe there's 2,700 irrigation permits or irrigators in the state of Minnesota, and we're pretty much all in the same boat if we wouldn't have water.
Okay. Members, any questions? Senator, your next guest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next, I'd like to introduce Mr. Norm Krause.
Thank you, Welcome. Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm testifying in support of the changes in this Senate file. And just a little bit about my background. I'm Norm Krause.
Just for the record, please identify yourself.
I'm Norm Krause from Staples area. And so I live south of Staples. Dale is north of Staples. I grew up on a dairy farm in central Todd County, and from there then went to Central Lakes Ag Center, a demonstration research center at Staples, located at Staples, formerly called the Irrigation Center. I was there for 22 years, retired from there, and now I farm full-time south of Staples. And again, like Dale, about 60-70% of our land is irrigated, and it's the light sandy soils that we currently farm and rent. Just a little bit about my past. I was a past executive director of the State Irrigators Association. Also, I currently serve as on the Todd Wadena Electric Cooperative Board, chairman of the Minnesota Rural Electric Association for 7 years. I'm on the Ag Fertilizer Research Education Council, the North Harvest Bean Growers Council, and also Todd Soil and Water Conservation District. So that's a little bit about my past. My wife and I, we worked many years in professional jobs to build our farm. And currently we have a number of irrigation systems, and we pump all of our water from groundwater. And this is the water that is, again, like Dale said, we recirculate that water, we pump it out, we use it for the crop. And then the normal rainfall recharges our aquifers. We grow both food and fuel. So our crops include corn, which is used for ethanol and the byproduct for livestock feed. Our soybeans are both GMO and non-GMO, which is shipped to Japan and other areas. We grow kidney beans and pink beans and also malting barley. And I don't think St. Paul would be nearly as much fun this weekend without the malting barley. So I wanted to talk a little bit again. In our area, we normally receive 26 to 30 inches of moisture a year, which is more than adequate for crop production. A normal 180 bushel corn crop would take 18 inches of moisture a year to produce 180 bushels. But during the times of July and August when we have peak water use, if we do not receive rainfall or do not have irrigation, in 5 days we can go from a totally saturated soil profile to where the crop is starting to show stress within 5 days if we do not have irrigation or rainfall. And then within another 10 days, that crop can be totally destroyed in peak water use conditions in hot and dry weather. So we always say that if, we're always about 3 days away from a drought in our area. So irrigation is extremely important to us. Without it, we would not produce any kidney beans. There would be no potato production in Minnesota. And as you know, there's many, many jobs with potato production. And so also it would significantly reduce our yields of corn and soybeans and alfalfa. So, again, it's very important. Because of high inputs, the sandy soils in Minnesota, if we didn't have the irrigation and the water available for it, would be good for CRP or other government programs. And that would be resulting in higher food and fuel costs. So we're testifying, Mr. Chairman, in support of
members,
the changes.
Members, any questions? Any questions, members? Well, we certainly know the importance of water after all the testimony, but we have to clear up one thing, I think, that you retired and then you started to farm. So really, farming is
going
kind of
retirement.
A retirement job. Is that correct? Senator Scoy?
Well, I was hoping I could win the lottery so I could farm until it was all
That's
gone.
That's right. There we go. You win the lottery so you can farm and spend it all. There you go. Got it. Thank you, members. Any further questions at all? Senator Hall.
I'd like to move the bill.
Move Senate File 2004 as amended to the floor, or for passage to the floor. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Well, we did determine that the south of Staples is Todd County and north of Staples is Wadena County. Yeah, we did. I wasn't too far off.
Just remember, Mr. Chair, if you get done by 6 o'clock, you're chairman of the year.
Senator Olson's here.
Nobody believed we were going to get to 6 o'clock.
Senator Howe. Senate File 2175, and as I understand, Senator Howe, there's a technical amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
We'll do that orally. We'll have Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that on line 1.13, instead of lot 2, it should be lot 3. I think that was the only – it had some technical issues before in a different version of this bill, but as this was introduced, my understanding is that's the only change that needs to be made is on 1.13, delete the 2 after lot and insert 3.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall offers the oral amendment.
I do.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. 2175, Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a bill that allows for public sale of tax-forfeited land bordering public waters in Goodhue County. I do have the DNR here to testify.
Kathy Lewis, welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The DNR reviewed the bill. We identified there was a legal description problem, which has been corrected, and we have no concerns.
Very good. Very good. Members, any questions? Hearing none, thank you. Senate File 2175 is amended. It'll be laid on the table.
Thank you so much.
Senator Olson, welcome.
Do you do yours yet?
Not yet. I wouldn't mind going last. I'm going to be here anyway.
There's only two bills left.
I should be out of here in 10 minutes.
Senate File 2399.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 2399 is Hennepin County's request for tax forfeited land parcels or transfers that are proposed for special legislation.
Is he serious? That's to get out of the...
There are three parcels within River. The city, or within the county, excuse me. It's been a long day. That they're requesting transfer. They are tax forfeited parcels that are on water. At least one of them has no access. The other one is that the city has requested that the parcel be conveyed to them for public floodplain open space and wetland mitigation. And the third one, they would like conveyed to them for the public purpose of, that's the city of Corcoran, for purpose of stormwater ponding and a recreational trail. The one that is has no access, that borders on a lake and wetlands, is city of Dayton has requested that that would also be conveyed to them for public purposes, wetland purposes. And I don't think there's somebody here from Hennepin County to address these issues. If you have any questions,
we'll ask if there's any questions. Ms. Lewis, did you have the DNR's input into this, please?
Mr. Chair, members, the DNR has reviewed the bill and has no concerns about it.
Okay. Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, if Senator Olson would allow me, I'd like to move this bill. Senator Olson and I have worked on some of these land issues in the past, and it's always been a pleasure. And,
thank you,
yeah,
Senator
glad
Scoy.
To see you getting this accomplished.
Good. Any further questions, members? Seeing none, Senate file number 2399 will be laid over on the table. Excuse me, laid on the table. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Sorry about the delay, Senator.
Sorry. Finished committee over there, so it worked out.
Perfect. You can stick around if you'd like.
We have a few chairs on this side of the table.
Senator Higgins, we have
is
room
getting
now.
Lonely.
Senator Limmer, Senate file 2294.
Yeah, really.
Welcome, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have Senate file 2294, and this once again involves the city of Dayton and the city that's across the river, the city of Ramsey. As you may or may not know, a few years ago, an unnecessary overlap of regulation occurred when the Wild Scenic River Act was established, and then later the Mississippi River Corridor critical area overlapped, and it's putting both of these cities in a rather unique position. Dayton and Ramsey have invested in the development of long-range plans to preserve the character of their cities and at the same time expand their economic development potential. This preservation and development is very important for both cities, residents, and businesses. However, problems have arisen due to the overlapping regulations of both these programs. In the 1970s, the DNR implemented the Wild and Scenic River designation. That included water and shoreline passing by the cities of both Dayton and Ramsey. And then shortly after that, the state's Environmental Quality Board, along with the Met Council, designated the same shore a critical area, anticipating that the designation would eventually be rescinded and the corridor management would remain under only the Minnesota Wild and Scenic River Act. I hope everyone's following me carefully
yes,
on this.
We're very close attention, Senator Limmer.
The overlapping regulation remained, and the Environmental Quality Board did not agree in the DNR's management plan for the Mississippi River in that area. Dayton and Ramsey are governed by both rules, and problems have arisen pertaining to the city's ability to grow and develop. It's just one of those situations where we just have too much regulation. Pick one or the other, and they would like to favor one, and that would be the critical area designation. And I have representatives from both cities here, and if you have time, they'd like to say a few words.
Absolutely. Welcome to the committee. Who would like to go first?
I'll go first. Mr. Chair and members, thank you again. My name is Erin Stawara. I am the Assistant City Administrator with the City of Dayton. I first want to start out and say that the Mississippi River is undeniably the greatest natural resource either of our communities have, and we are absolutely committed to protecting that resource and have plans to do so in our cities. The cities of Dayton and Ramsey understand the intent of the Wild and Scenic Act as well as the Mississippi River Corridor area. However, these two sets of rules create a lot of unnecessary overlap of similar rules. It's very difficult for property owners, developers, and even sometimes city staff trying to discern this. Some of that is contradictory, and there's an added level of complexity in an already complex set of rules. It's unnecessary level of regulation given regulations are already in place. The cities of Dayton and Ramsey are the only two cities along the 72-mile Mississippi River Critical Corridor that are currently under both the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act and Mississippi River Critical Area rules. This, based on my interactions with the DNR over the last several years, was always meant to be corrected with rulemaking. It has just never got to that point. So we have worked very, very closely with the DNR to draft this language in this bill that they do support, and I believe they have a representative here that can speak to that. But the proposed legislation removes the cities of Dayton from designation as a component of the Wild and Scenic Recreation River System. The current zoning standards in effect in each of our cities at the time of passage of this bill will become the minimum standards for future critical area ordinance review by the DNR, as they have to review and approve any ordinances we have for that area. And the city of Dayton shall be classified as rural open space according to the governor's executive order 7919 because it was left out of that executive order by mistake at that time. So that is all I have. My counterpart with the city of Ramsey would like to speak as well.
Mr.
Thank you
Gladhill,
very much.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Tim Gladhill, senior planner with the city of Ramsey. Many of my comments echo my colleagues here, so I'll keep my comments very brief. I know we're running out of time here. Just want to state on the onset that Ramsey is very fortunate in our natural resources, our shoreline areas, and two rivers, the Mississippi and the Rum River. This bill is an important goal for our city council in streamlining some of our administrative processes, and we try to make the best use out of our staff resources in interpreting our rules and regulations and conveying those to our residents. So I'm here to support the bill as it's informed this evening, and I also want to thank the DNR staff for taking the time to work with us on this issue, both currently and over the past couple of years. So with that, I'll keep my comments very brief.
Thank you. Members, any questions of the... Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Squara, what was the approximate population of the city of Dayton in 1979, and what is it now?
Oh, boy. In 1979, I don't know. I can't say, but I can say it was probably less than 500 at that point, and today we're just shy of 5,000, and hope to be 50,000 someday.
But then you won't be rural and open space anymore when that happens.
We won't. But that is where we are today.
Senator Limmer, do you remember that far back? Yes, you
no.
do. It was here then.
I don't even remember yesterday.
Members, any questions? Seeing none, representative from the DNR, would you like to testify? Would members have any questions? Ms. Lewis?
Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, DNR, we have been working with the cities and the author on this bill, and we are in support of it.
Can I ask a question?
Senator Scoy, I think.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Myers, just for my curiosity, if the DNR's planning had progressed, I mean, I know it didn't, but if it had, would have this been resolved in that planning process?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, yes.
Okay.
That was our intentions.
Members, any further questions about Senate File 2294? Hearing none, Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate File 2294 to be moved.
To pass to the floor and possible inclusion. And inclusion.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All same sign. Thank you, Senator Limmer.
Thank you.
As you can see, we can get our work done with half a committee.
Teach my judiciary members how to do that.
Right. Just slightly more.
Especially when I.
Oh, excuse me. Slightly more than half, of course. With a quorum. Senator Carlson.
You want me to just do it from
here? Is this the last one?
Yeah.
Can we drag it out a little bit?
So
you got to get Kathy to give you the testimony.
Senator Carlson, you can do it from there. Senate File 1750, tax forfeit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a request from Beltrami County for four parcels of land. The reason it's coming before this committee is because of the riparian nature of the land. And at that, I will turn it over to Ms. Lewis.
Thank you.
Ms. Lewis, welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The DNR has reviewed Senate File 1750 and has no comments. I do have a question of whether there's an amendment to incorporate the DNR.
We do have an A1 amendment.
Super.
We'll pass that out. Ms. Lewis, to the A1 amendment, Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I should just explain quickly. This is an amendment. The Senate already passed 1839, or this committee passed 1839, excuse me. And these were the land provisions that were in 1839 that were sent to the Judiciary Committee. And so this is just going to put those into the lands bill. The committee has already seen these. It was just in another bill that may not be moving any further.
Members, any questions on the A1 amendment? Senator Carlson offers the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Senator Carlson's.
And, Mr. Chair, I do have the A2 amendment as well.
Vote no, folks.
Senator Carlson offers the A2 okay. amendment. We'll pass it out.
Mr. Chair, while they're passing
sure.
out
to the amendment.
The amendment, I'll do, this is the Boundary Water Canoe Area Exchange Bill, and I'll have Ms. Lewis describe it.
Lewis.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, the Department of Natural Resources has been working with the United States Forest Service on addressing the issue of to get the school trust lands out of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. And if in 2010 the legislature passed a resolution that recommended to Congress that they proceed to work with us on that issue, and the model in the resolution is a one-third land exchange, two-thirds land sale. Through the discussions with the United States Forest Service, we have identified potentially 41,000 acres of federal land for the exchange. And one of the next steps is to ensure that we have the state legislation that is needed and also start working with the federal government so they have their federal legislation that is needed in order to move forward with an exchange and future sale. Section 1 of the A2 amendment addresses the land exchange process. What this does is provide some expedited methods to be able to work more quickly and also more cheaply in working through the exchange process. The land valuation is going to be by the method that is agreed to between the commissioner and the representative of the United States. Appraisals are certainly an item that can be looked at, but we also will be looking at not having to identify and go on each piece of parcel of land. Land that we're looking at for the title, the school trust lands in particular, have excellent title. They do not need a full title opinion by the Attorney General's office, so there's some means that we can do more quickly than that. The Constitution provides that land exchange has to be approved by the Land Exchange Board, and so that's certainly recognized that is a requirement. But this will provide a shorter means to work our way through the process. Section 2 of the amendment provides for condemnation of the school trust lands. The Constitution provides that school trust lands can only be sold by public sale. What this does is condemns the school trust lands through the court proceedings, but provides that the payment would not be made until we are ready to sell the land to the United States. And then at that time, the award would become due, and the payment would come from the United States to the state, to the school trust fund lands. Section 3 provides that once we have the condemnation, we can proceed to direct sale of the lands to the United States, and it would also cover any remaining acquired lands and tax forfeited lands that are within the BWCA, and so that would provide for the direct sale of those lands to the United States.
Members, any questions? Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I would just say that this is the bill, and maybe Ms. Lewis can correct me if I'm wrong, that this was language that was worked on the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee. And just at the last PSFAC meeting, they did another reinforced an earlier decision that they wanted to move forward with this. The discussion had come down to there was some discussion about, do we want to do all land for land exchange on the full 86,000 or whatever. That knowing that was just not going to be feasible or workable with the federal government and have this drag out for years and years and years, that this was a better solution to get money into the school trust land, is to swap what we can swap, sell what we can't, you know, have the federal government buy the rest. And so this would be the most effective for the best amount of money for the school trust lands.
Senator Carlson, we have an issue with the A2 amendment. I'm going to have Mr. Knopf address that. It pertains to Section 2 of the bill, starting on page 2 and going into page 3. So, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, earlier, the Thomasoni bill talked. It was sent to judiciary because of the condemnation process that was involved in it. This also, in fact, it actually, it even notwithstands portions of the current condemnation law, which is under the jurisdiction of the Judiciary Committee. And this, putting this amendment on here, could send the entire land sale bill to the Judiciary Committee. I don't know if you wanted to do that. One thought is that, I mean, this condemnation isn't going to happen anytime soon. You could alter Section 2, so you just remove subdivisions 3, 4, and 5, and then refer to it as identification of school trust lands for exchange. And then you would not need to go to the Judiciary Committee if you're just identifying those, because they do have to be condemned. I mean, school trust lands have to be sold by public sale, and a condemnation is considered a public sale within the meaning of that phrase in the Constitution. So if you put this on as it is, this whole bill will need to go to the Judiciary Committee, and it will not make deadline on the first deadline anyways on the Senate side.
Senator Carlson and Ms. Lewis, your thoughts?
Mr. Chair, members, the discussions with the U.S. Forest Service is that we're first focused on the land exchange, so it is correct that we will not need to be doing the condemnation sale at this point in time, and so the amendment to delete that section and the sale provisions are acceptable.
Senator Carlson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's acceptable to me.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, no. I don't know that you have to delete the whole section. You could leave the identification in subdivisions 1 and 2 to make sure that you can start on the process, and then change the title of it to identification of school trust lands for exchange without – I mean, you don't really need this section, but if you wanted to keep a portion of it to make it clear –
So I, what I'm hearing, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Knopf,
Senator Carlson,
is we probably don't need that at all.
Okay.
Okay. So make clear the.
Well, Mr.
Amendment
Chair.
Amendment to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, you don't need this is Senator Carlson's amendment. So what I would do at this point is Senator Carlson is just going to move sections 1 and 3 from the A2 amendment.
So moved.
So he's deleting section. He's modifying his amendment without Section 2.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Any further discussion at all with regards to the Senate File 1750?
You need the big one now.
Huh?
You need to put all the other bills on now.
Okay, I'm being told that we're going to pull all the bills together now, so I'll let Mr. Knopf.
Oh, Mr. Chair. The motion you've got, Senate File 1750 in front of you, as amended, and the motion would be to add the contents of Senate File 1479 as amended by the committee, Senate File 1541 as amended by the committee, Senate File 1591, Senate File 1627, Senate File 1655, Senate File 2116 as amended by the committee. Senate File 2132 as amended by the committee, Senate File 2175 as amended by the committee, Senate File 2245, Senate File 2294, Senate File 2399. All of those, as I indicated, the ones that were amended and then also the contents of the others that were not amended, those bills would be added as an amendment to Senate File 1750 and be prepared as a delete. It would be a delete everything amendment to the bill with all, including what's in the bill right now and all of those that I read.
Does everyone understand? Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Knopf, did I hear you say that you were including 2294? I thought we already passed that to the floor. Well,
oh, that was your question.
Mr. Chair, it was my and Senator, it was my understanding that that was sent to the floor, but there also the motion was and
yes.
to include as in the land sale bill.
You will try. That's right.
Is it land sale? We're not selling any land there.
Thank you, Mr. Knopf.
Well, it's a lands bill.
Everyone understand the amendment as conveyed by Mr. Knopf. Any questions at all? Senator Carlson renews his motion to pass Senate file number. I'm sorry.
You didn't do the amendment, did you?
I'm sorry, what amendment?
Voted on the amendment to put all that stuff in.
You got to vote.
Oh, we have to vote on the amendment. To the amendment to add all the different bills to the lands bill. Any further questions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill is now in order, Senate File 1750, as amended. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You could move that bill.
I did, so moved.
Bill is so moved. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
Thank you, members.
That's all there is before the committee. It stands adjourned. Thank you all. Right,